Howdy, everyone, and welcome to Dead Pit Radio. I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
And I'm Uncle Bill. Hello.
Oh, boy, do we have a fun-filled, action-packed, jizzerific episode of Dead Pit for you tonight, folks, for you tonight. Now, even though we do not have a fan call-in portion of the show due to technical difficulties, Lord Alfred Hayes fucked up the phone lines again.
Yeah, he's too busy
playing electronic battleship
and Brute Clone.
Yeah. Brute Clone.
Stetson.
Yeah.
The anyway, best a man can get.
We're going to make the best of it because we do have a pre-recorded mic check with Michael Slipcase Felcher. A good hour-long discussion on many subjects. We get a lot of stuff in there in this one. I think this is the fifth mic check and the best of all.
Yeah, pretty much anything you can think of as far as DVD releases go, we talk about. Plus, we talk about tons of other stuff, too, just related to Michael Felcher's personal life.
Indeed.
And his love.
His personal preferences when it comes
desires.
To Jean-Claude Van Damme films, yeah. Stuff like that.
Just a complete biography
so,
on the
man. Oh, yeah. That's right, buddy. Get all geared up. Go finger fuck your papaw. Get ready.
Guess what happened this week, though?
What?
Can you guess? I won't give you a hint. We didn't win a Rondo.
I know, Uncle Bill. You don't have to bring that up. I'm already gloomy enough as it is over here.
We've been nominated 2 years in a row now. We've lost 2 straight years in a row to the same people.
At least we're not third place like we were last year. We're second place this year, buddy. We beat fucking Fangoria's ass.
Yeah. We still lost, so it's a sad day.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of sucks.
Maybe we should try to interview Boris Karloff's gardener, Jose.
Yeah.
He's 104.
That's a good idea. He would, I kept the hedges trimmed. Boris would come out and he would say, you trim these fucking hedges.
I said his name was Jose, not Lucio.
That's also my Spanish
accent.
No,
Jose would be like, well, what was Boris Karloff like? Or did I say Boris Karloff? Or,
yeah, it doesn't matter.
One of those old fucks or dead fucks. He'd be like, gay!
Would he? Gay!
More like the, gay! Ah! Yeah, so maybe if we go towards that audience, you know, the Rondos is geared toward more, and you know, let's face facts. I mean, let's give credit where credit is due.
No.
Rumorg Radio won. Okay.
No, it didn't.
Among their audience, which is 60 to 80 year old horror fans. Okay, so we're.
Is that it?
Yeah, we are the show for the new generation. You know,
it's true. It's like Pepsi. Okay.
We get brutal talking about all the latest Eli Roth films and Saw films and all that. And new to those guys are, you know, stuff like, what is something really old we can make fun of?
Mothra.
That's new to them, you know. And, I mean, look at it like this. Here's another way to spin it a little bit to make it seem like we really didn't lose. The number one horror convention was something called the Monster Bash. Have you ever heard of the Monster Bash?
I've never heard of the Monster Bash.
Yeah. It actually featured, from what I understand, Butch Patrick.
You're fucking kidding me.
Yeah, that's Butch a legendary Patrick? Guest.
Golly, how did I miss that one, though? But that's the Monster Bash.
Yeah,
though.
He brought his little Frankenstein toy with him.
It was a graveyard day. Here's what I think it is. I'll tell you what I really think is going on here. I think it's the British accent. I think that the people that tune into that show automatically think, because they are between 60 and 80, that the people doing that show are really, really smart because they got a British accent.
Yeah.
Well, actually, one of them has a Canadian accent. Nobody could ever think that.
You know what I think it is? I think Nikolai Volkoff is using his pull, you know, his daughter Ivanka Volkoff, right. Formerly of Rumorg, you know, they're pulling their weight, you know, using all of their leverage to win all sorts of awards. Like, all right, I like Rumorg magazine. Not as much as I used to, but I still sort of like it. No way it's a better magazine than Whorehound, in my opinion.
Yeah. How dare you talk about their magazine on this show? That magazine is amazing.
It does have a killer cover, like with the two Freddies.
And here's the thing. We don't really know how it is now. We haven't bought it since the new editor took over. We have no idea, like, what's going on with it now.
Since Dirty Dave Alexander.
Yeah. Since Dave the Bruiser Alexander took over. Who knows? But I will say this, though, that I think that it is in large part due to them giving away Tim Hortons to get votes. And I don't appreciate that.
And those free packets of fucking Easy Mac.
I don't appreciate that. Yeah, they're mailing out Easy Mac packets to all the voters.
And get this, too. I didn't know about this. They were, everyone that voted for Rue Morgue, they gave, you know, they entered them in a contest to win the brand new Dino Bravo figure. Classic Superstars.
Yeah.
It comes with Frenchie Martin.
You get to play with your new Dino Bravo figure, and then you get like a free ticket to see Geddy Lee. He's doing a spoken word tour now. Do you know that?
Yeah.
That'll be awesome, man.
Hey, buddy. How you doing out there? I'm just going to talk about my new CD.
So anyway.
I love Canada, though. Yeah. Buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, Rue Morgue Radio is the number one horror podcast, just like Nickelback is the number one rock band. No way. No motherfucking way. And we'll leave it at that.
Look, I'm not going to say that now. That's just mean. All joking aside, though, I do congratulate them, even though we are.
And last chance Lance Geddy Lee's looking ass there. Ultimately, though, congratulations to all the winners of the Rajon Rondo Award.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's a esteemed basketball star.
Amazing point guard.
And hopefully one day, you know, we may be considered once again for the nomination and hopefully win. We just got to strategize our cheating.
You know what we got to do?
Yeah.
You know what we got to do?
Yeah.
Next year.
We need a conference call.
We have to... In order to win the Rajon Rondo Award next year, we have to be both ballers and
shot callers.
That's right. That's the only way we can win.
Yeah, we need to call the shots. We need to get a dead pit Rondo Award street team where, you know, Tuesday, Uncle Bill's your day. You sign up for 10 email accounts on Tuesday.
Right.
Then we'll get Dana over here on Wednesday. Dana will do it. We know she's a hardcore dead pit fan.
Mm-hmm.
Dana signs up for 10 email accounts on Wednesday and votes for us.
Mm-hmm.
On Thursday, it's ST3 to the B. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's his day. Thursday, 5 more. See, we do that each week. Tuesday's your day. Dana's Wednesday. Steve's Thursday. There we go. That'd be what? How many more awards? I suck at math. How many more awards would that be or nominations?
I don't know. A whole shitload. It ain't going to matter anyway. We ain't never going to win.
Yeah, because unbeknownst to us, feedback, Stuart Andrews, hit the Scottish family, they run deep, don't they?
That's right. I mean, he is a direct descendant of William Wallace. I don't know if a lot of people realize that. And Scrooge McDuck as well.
Anyway.
So that's good.
Anyway. Yeah, there you go. There's your rant. I'm sure everyone was waiting on it. Yeah.
I'm still mad. I ain't over it at all.
That's true, too.
God.
Rob Scott won. He won the fan award for, best fan artwork or whatever. He beat a couple of 10, 11-year-olds. To
Buddy, look, that ain't true at all.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but that is a big congratulations to Rob. I know he'd been wanting to win that for a while now. I think it was like the Fan Artist of the Year 2010 award. And when we talk to Felcher, he'll be talking about that as well.
Yeah. The funny thing about Felcher is he can spin it any way he wants that he won the award. But if you look at it, Felcher, as far as like, I guess his DVDs were nominated and stuff like that, he won on a commentary track by Fred Decker. But he's going to be getting the award. Now, Fred Decker, that's Fred Decker's award, Felcher. That's not yours.
Did he moderate that, though? I don't even know. I don't know. I didn't listen to that commentary.
It wasn't Moderator of the Year award. It was the commentary of the Year.
You be nice. God.
You tell me to be nice. Anyway, congratulations to all the Rondo Award winners.
Good job.
Everything was just a joke, just so nobody gets upset like old Crotchy's fuck stick flower hour drinking their bed of mutual that came in, they come in fucking fourth or fifth place.
Point and laugh, children. Point and laugh.
Fuck you. You can throw, and you know something else we did?
What are you going to do now? Get on your
You know what we did? You know what we did Whorehound Weekend? For the old Crotchy's flower fuck stick meta mutual hour, we took some of the flowers, wiped our fucking ass with them, and threw them on the ground. Because that's exactly where they belong.
I can't breathe. Oh.
Anyway, that's enough of the,
That was nice, though. I mean, I think that the one thing you can always say about us is that in the end, we graciously accept defeat. I don't think anybody would argue with that.
Because, hell, think about it like this. I mean, shit. If we did ever win, whenever somebody comes into our, gigantic mansion in Prestonsburg, they would see that award and they'd be, holy fucking dog shit! That's a fucking Rondo! You actually won a Rondo award? God damn it! Of all the awards there are to win, I just won some fucking creepy looking guy's head. Son of a bitch. Yeah. Anyway. Woo, baby.
It'd actually probably be more like this if somebody saw that award.
What the fuck is that, my God? That's something you propped your car up with.
Tiger. That's a doorstep.
Hey, boss. What y'all doing? What the fuck is that?
Anyway, it's all in good fun. Aside from old Crotchy, fuck those fuckers.
Okay.
In the gutters.
In the gutters.
That was our little editorial about that whole situation. I hope you enjoyed that.
Anyway,
appreciate all the
ranting has just begun, though, because there's a movie in particular we're reviewing on this show.
Whew.
That will, it'll leave you astounded and grounded.
Yeah, we actually, aside from doing the mic check on this show with Michael Slipcase Filster, we are reviewing George Romero's latest zombie epic. I can't even really say that with a straight face.
It's
but
an epic.
I'm trying. Survival of the Dead.
If it was on the Sci-Fi Channel, it might get away with epic.
It is epic.
And also, the newest new from Hack Movies. Oh, yes, our good buddies. Kevin Strange and company are at it again in the land of Strangeville with Nixon and Hogan. Smoke Christmas. Let me tell you something, Uncle Bill. I would love, baby, to smoke the weed with your ass, if you will, because he's hot. She's hot. I don't know where Kevin Strange found her, baby. I'm guessing it's at Strangeville Strip Club. Ooh, daddy.
She's one of the many minions. The mini minions of Strangeville.
That's right. I let her fart on my face.
You let her fart. You did a salad. Did eat it with the blue teeth dressing, daddy.
Oh, you know what I do, baby? You know what I do? Yeah. Holla. I take my buttercup, baby. Let her pee in it. And I dip my crab in it. My crab leg. Yeah.
Scandalous.
No, that's kind of nasty. Right? I wouldn't do that.
You don't want to do that.
Any sort of urine consumptions, save for the rad girls.
And any Asian women.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
We got news to get to, Uncle Bill. We can never get started with this shit. Let's talk about...
I'm ready. I've been holding this shit for an hour.
Scream 4. Writer-director Kevin Williamson recently twittered... Uncle Bill, say... Twitter back... Twitter back... On Neve Campbell's original refusal to partake in the new trilogy of Scream films, which would have caused major rewrites in the script. In short, it wouldn't be his original vision. But a new interview with Williamson was posted today where he goes on record about what was going through his head. He says, Jesus Christ! to have Sydney back, well, I was always holding out hope because the script is about Sydney, Gail, and Dewey. The story for Scream 4, 5, and 6, the launching pin of that was 4, which is those three characters. But I found out originally when Campbell declined, I had to reroute it. That would put all the onus on Gale and Dewey to carry the whole story, and had me thinking fast on my toes. But luckily, we got her, and I don't have to worry about that. I can do it exactly the way I wanted, and the story's going to be told the way I originally conceived it. I've been contracted to write 4 and 5. Wes Craven is locked to direct. The film hits theaters, I guess, next April 15th. So that'll be out next year.
So basically, he's just telling us that he gets to do everything that he already planned on doing before.
He's so excited. He just can't hide it. Kevin Williams is directing and writing. No, he's not directing. He's writing Scream 4, Doodle.
I bet there's nobody happier in the world they're making Scream 4 than Kevin Williams.
No, this that guy's been out of work for a while.
He's going to make Curse 2, but that didn't pan out.
Curse 2, still cursed.
Yeah. So
now in theaters,
this will be funny. This will be fun to talk about, considering the way I feel about this. They're actually... been confirmed by Deadline New York, but originally reported by another site that there's going to be a Toxic Avenger remake. Confirmed that a partnership with Dutch reality TV giant Endemol has financed the acquisition of rights to Troma's The Toxic Avenger franchise that includes 4 sequels, an animated TV series, and comic books. Says, the group intends to turn Toxie into a green superhero for these environmentally conscious times. I guess he kind of was that before, though, wasn't he?
Yep.
I guess, never mind. But they really don't have any more information than that on the story right now. But I'm assuming that it will be even more, like, eco-friendly than it was back then, where it wasn't really eco-friendly. Then it was just a message against nuclear waste.
True. Yeah, I mean, it sort of makes sense for Troma to do this because, I don't know if Troma's going to do it. They're going to license it to a bigger studio or what, but still to this day, it's the only true hit that Troma had. I mean, of course, there's always Sergeant Kabuki Man and Surf Nazis Must Die and stuff like that, but none of them, they all paled in comparison to the Toxic Avenger. And it's still to this day, probably the only Troma movie that I think is really a classic. Honestly, in my opinion.
It really, I mean, it's the only one that he directed that I think you could really consider to be a classic.
And I know some people like, you know, there's some diehard Troma fans out there that unfortunately spend way too much money on the DVDs and call themselves traumatic fans. What do they call them? Tromites?
Tromettes.
Tromettes are the bitches. What the guys call them, just dumbasses.
Dumbasses. Here's the thing. Like, one thing that I'm really looking forward to and that you can guarantee when this remake actually does come out is you'll be able to go to conventions and there'll be a bunch of strippers and cokeheads standing around Lloyd Kaufman with mops and shit and that'll be killer.
Yeah!
And then...
Dressing up as Captain Tennille or something.
That'll be good, though. I mean, that's what everybody wants to see.
Yeah. I just think, like, those people, they're not bad people. They're just misguided. And we need to take control of the ship and guide them to the path of righteousness.
Are we going
to
do like the Ultimate Warrior and take control of the plane?
Yeah.
Guide it down towards the ground.
Let me tell you what we're going to do, brother. I want to go gliding down Venice Beach, dude. what we're going to do now is we're going to take a break. And we will be back after the latest chapter of Bill. To the future.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Back to the Future here on Dead Pit. I have to say, it was a relatively slow day in the world of horror, and there really isn't a whole lot for me to talk about this week. Easily the most famous of the films released was on April 9th, 1953, when 20th Century Fox Film Corporation released the sci-fi horror classic, Invaders from Mars.
Invaders from Mars. Weird, fantastic beings of a super intelligence. Ruling a race of synthetic humans and pitting them against mankind's dream to conquer the universe.
The film is about a young boy played by Jimmy Hunt who witnesses an alien spaceship landing in his backyard. Upon investigating the disturbance, the boy's father returns to the house with an unusual mark on his neck and a strange demeanor, acting as if he was an entirely different person. Slowly but surely, many of the other residents begin acting quite similar, and it's up to the boy to somehow convince a few of the unaffected adults that what they are witnessing is an all-out alien takeover. The film was remade 33 years later by Texas Chainsaw director Tobe Hooper. In the remake, Jimmy Hunt has a cameo appearance playing the role of the police chief, which is pretty cool. Anyway, moving on April 9th, 1976, Universal Pictures released Alfred Hitchcock's final film, a dark comedy called Family Plot.
Good evening. I hope you'll excuse me if I appear a trifle excited.
With an estimated budget of $3 million, the film will gross a total of $13.2 million in the United States. And finally, on April 9th, 1996, MCA Universal released Tremors 2, The Aftershocks on home video. Fred Ward reprises his role as Earl Bassett from the original 1990 film. Earl is hired by Petromaya Oil Company to help them exterminate a large amount of the Graboids who have been killing off workers in their Mexican oil fields. He recruits his good friend Bert Gummer to help out.
Once I got on board, I handled with a combination of small arms fire and hand-to-hand techniques. I am completely out of ammo. That's never happened to me before.
Shot on a budget of approximately $4 million, the film was considered a success on home video and paved the way for two more home video sequels in 2001 and in 2004, both starring Michael Gross as Bert Gummer. A fifth Tremors film, titled Tremors 5, The Thunder from Down Under, is also said to be in the works. Anyway, I'm Adam Beck, and this is Beck to the Future, and your release is for Friday, April 9th.
This is feedback from Broomorg Radio and Cinephobia Radio, and you are listening to DeadPit.com.
And welcome back, ladies
Hello.
And gentlemen.
Hello.
Did you enjoy that Back to the Future segment?
Adam always does a great job of that. You can check out his website on. Have you been to his website
I've
yet?
Been to his website.
MovieMasker.com, bitch. Check it out. He does Back to the Future shit. He does it every day. I mean, that's hardcore right there to find shit every day.
Motherfucker is off the heezy for sheezy.
So anyway, let's talk about Saw 7 in 3D. Well, a movie that I know we're all highly waiting, anticipating the release of this one. Promoting the DVD and Blu-ray of The Collector this week, and believe me, they were definitely promoting it. A lot of people, like, I don't know if you saw the email, they wanted us to do the interview with Marcus Dunson.
No,
yeah.
I didn't see that.
You can interview him, buddy. He's the director of The Collector and writer of Saw, whatever.
Wasn't he in Dunstan Checks In?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, they were talking about the first 3D entry, which comes out October 22nd. He said, the great thing about seeing Saw 3D happen is being immersed in that technology for the last 2 months. He's taken a break from drafting a script for The Collector 2. Which I've never seen The Collector. I've actually heard it is pretty decent, but I don't know. Could we? What studio release is that? Do you know?
But I have no idea.
he says, what I saw was so awesome, allowing someone total immersion in the horror world was tremendous. Says it's not a poke in the eye type of show. It's, hey, we've been yelling at you for the screen for years. Now we're going to invite you in. In this case, I haven't seen this in an extremely violent R-rated world where it's just where it's not just stimulating from gore, but we want to give you something that's fresh and hard.
Oh, Lord.
It's fresh. It's hard. Yeah. It's the same thing. Like, you know, I can see where that might actually be pretty cool if you could experience it in 3D. For us.
No, it's never going to happen.
Yeah. None of the theaters. I guess the closest theater that can play 3D would be in Lexington, which is 90 minutes from here. So
guess who's going to be going to that?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, if I go to see a 3D movie, I'm definitely not going to go see fucking Saw 7.
We'll go see the new remake of Sophie's Choice in 3D. So, Dante Tomaselli, who's a guy that we haven't heard a lot from in quite a while. The last thing I remember hearing about the guy was The Ocean, but I don't think that ever happened.
I couldn't get funding for that one.
So, he's actually got a new flick that's just been announced called Torture Chamber. It's going into production later this month in New York and New Jersey. And he's got the plot synopsis here. A 13-year-old Jimmy Morgan is possessed by an evil too powerful to be exorcised by any priest.
Jimmy.
1 year after his own brother, Father Mark Morgan, nearly died in the attempt.
Matt Morgan.
Yeah. Jimmy is back with a vengeance and an army of horribly burned children who follow his every murderous desire. The town of Smithville trembles in fear as Jimmy and his deadly young followers attack and abduct its residents, innocent and guilty alike, dragging their victims to an abandoned castle and subjecting them to grisly torments deep within its catacombs.
Deep within the orifices.
Those who discover the terrible secret behind the disappearances and deaths don't live long enough to tell it. The teacher, the doctor, the detective, even Jimmy's own brother and mother will all confront their fates in the torture chamber.
Oh,
it sounds like a WWE pay-per-view.
It's the torture chamber, bitch.
Kevin Sullivan's coming back for that one.
Fright Night, Uncle Bill. Fright Night remake. Finally finds its lead. DreamWorks is in final talks with Anton Yelchin to top line their remake of Tom Holland's cult 1985 vampire film. Craig Gillespie is helming the new version, which sticks to the concept of a teen being convinced that their new neighbor is a vampire. Although no one will believe him. The new version, written by Marty Noxon, keeps the character's name the same as the original, Charlie Brewster, and which was originally William Ragsdale's role, Uncle Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Yelchin was most recently in Terminator Salvation and the Star Trek remake, and you may remember him as the Michael Biehn lookalike. He's actually a pretty good little actor. I mean, I saw him in a movie that I think is kind of underrated, and you probably laugh at me for saying this. Alpha Dog. Have you ever seen that?
I never have, no.
That's actually pretty good.
That's the one with Justin Timberlake in it.
You'd fucking say that. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a good one. I think that I know who they should get to play Evil Ed, though. Topher Grace.
Topher Grace is too fucking old.
I think Topher Grace would make a
perfect Topher Grace
one.
Is a good 10 years older than Anton Yelchin.
But Topher Grace has that look, like that goofy looking, like, look to him.
Amanda Bierce's character, how about that? I say Megan Fox. Yeah.
That would certainly be a step up from the original like vision of her character in that movie, I guess. What about, there's going to have to be somebody that plays Peter Vincent. It'll be Christopher Lee. They could get Christopher Lee. That'd be good.
That'd be awesome, but yeah. I think he's probably a little too old, though. How about Malcolm McDowell?
That's actually a possibility. He looks a lot like Roddy McDowell.
You know what, though? Depending on what they do with this,
I'm going to do nothing good with it. Don't even go down that road.
Yeah, but I don't want to go down that road.
No.
Anyway, that's all.
Just when you think they'll do something good with it, it'll end up being like a sorority row or something.
I think it's pretty cool they got the Elchin kid. He's not that bad of an actor, I don't think. So what else you got over there, Uncle Bill?
You want to talk about some more Halloween 3D news?
No.
Let's do it anyway. Patrick Luthier.
Patrick Luthier. Say it right, motherfucker.
Who's currently attached to Direct Halloween 3D, gives this little piece of information. He says, were ready to go with this last year. Then the situation changed, and then we weren't. The film that we, meaning him and the wonderful writer Todd Farmer, wrote, took place.
On the bod.
Yeah, like the next frame after Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 ended.
Great.
And immediately went into stripping Michael Myers back to his John Carpenter roots. Mm-hmm. That's what we did very quickly, and then you pick up the story a year later, and as Halloween rolls around again, everybody's back in the fray. That was our goal. So he goes on to say, that will all depend on Dimension Films and the timing of the script.
Right.
He says, right now he's hard at work at Drive Angry 3D. So he doubts that he'll be putting any thought into Halloween 3D for quite a while.
Well, Todd Farmer being put into it's the proverbial turd in a punch bowl, so he'll ruin anything.
Toddy too hardy.
The fucking guy that wrote Jason X.
Yeah, he's from around here and he won't have anything to do with us. That's why we hate him so much, if you ever wonder that.
So anyway, that's it for the news, Uncle Bill. There's a couple more here, but I don't give a fuck. I don't want to talk about the Thing prequel.
You don't want to talk about that? That'll
no!
be great. Shut it on. Is an interesting point, though, that I think I was listening to Rambo talk about it, and I never really thought about it before, but the shittiest thing about that whole idea is you know how it's going to end.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's why I hate shit like that. Yeah. Like, what's the point? Like, there's nothing interesting. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you go and watch The Thing, you realize that nothing good's going to happen at the end of that movie.
But, Uncle Bill, we do have a convention this weekend. It's Sleepy's favorite convention, Cinema Wasteland, Uncle Bill. Cinema Wasteland this evening, or this weekend. Are you excited? Zombie reunion. Lucio Fulci's zombie reunion.
Yeah.
You're also going to have Ron Bonk is going to be there again.
Sal Lizard.
Sal Lizard's going to be there, rock and roll, strut and struggle. We'll be there all night long. Tim Gross will be there.
He will.
He's never on the guest list, but he'll be there. Who else?
Everybody that we've ever like known through the show, I think, is going to be there.
Yeah, but not us.
No.
So if a convention wants to be a baller.
And a shot caller.
They got to have Dead Pit, or they're just not rolling.
Thing is, though. I did want to actually mention that, I mean, the guest list for that zombie reunion is really, really good if you're into the movie Zombie. If not, then you're pretty fucked. But if you are into that, then that's a good guest list. And I think Mike is representing, like, a lot of those guys. But on the other end of the spectrum, in 2 weeks, is Chiller. That convention's coming up. That convention has a fuck ton of Italian people, including Ruggiero Deodato and almost everybody from the Cannibal Holocaust films. The woman that was the lead demon, I think her name was like Greta Garrett or something like that, or Garrett or something like that, in mm-hmm. Demons is going to be there. Sergio the Martino is going to be there. There's a ton of people that's going to be at that show. So I'm hopping that show. That's the show I'm going with.
Right, but Mike Bronze does have the zombie people.
He does have the zombie people there. It's in Wasteland.
So that's pretty cool. Kevin Clement, though, Chiller, is an awesome promoter, great guy, fan of the show, that has messaged me before, you know. And he's definitely a guy I have no problem supporting. So Chiller Theater, rock it like it's 1985.
Rock it like it's hot, buddy. Yeah.
Also, opening in limited theaters, Uncle Bill, I'm excited about this movie, Afterlife.
Oh.
With Christina Ricci, who I think is luscious. Mm.
Anything with her in is luscious.
Yeah. I've got the Blu-ray of Black Snake Moan. Let me tell you.
I don't want to be around when you watch it. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's nice. I like it quite a bit. Anyway, she is in a near constant state of undress in Agnieszka, I can't even pronounce it, Vosloo, something. Horror thriller. Which has received better reviews from genre fans than general press. Liam Neeson's in this, though. That's where it's got room to suck. He taps into the classic horror performances for his character, and Justin Long, his role in the film is very similar to his role in Drag Me to Hell. So we'll just have to wait and see. Anchor Bay is coming out with this. So
that's weird.
Kind of odd.
Yeah.
But it's limited. I think the full release is probably in a couple of weeks.
We'll check that out. So, DVD releases, for April the 13th. You've got the, these are a couple of the Shout Factory titles. Humanoids from the Deep re-release is coming out on DVD. You've got a two-pack with Up from the Depths and Demon of Paradise, which is also coming out. And this is not a Shout Factory release, but I thought this was pretty interesting. You've got a new box set called the Ed Wood Collection, which includes Plan 9 from Outer Space and Glenn or Glinda, along with four of his lesser-known films, including Night of the Ghouls, Bride of the Monster, Jailbait, and Crossroad Avengers.
Jailbait! Too late! Too late!
So there's your DVD. It's coming out April 13th.
We're going to do that, baby. We're going to take a break. But when we get back, we're going to have Michael Slipcase Felch on the line, if you will. It's mic check time here on Dead Pit.
Dead Cub. Woo! Woo!
Hey, yo. It's Bobby fucking De Niro over here. Let me tell you a little something. This new podcast out there, it's called Profondo Cinema. Yeah, a couple guys, Axel and Jay Scott, a couple of knuckleheads from around the way. It's hot like it's coming off the back of my fucking truck over here. Don't be a wise guy. Get your ass down there and check them out, ProfondoCinema.com. And remember, it's going to be a good summer.
Oddly enough, it's been about 6 months since we've done a mic check. It doesn't seem like it's been that long, but yeah, I was going back.
No, it doesn't. I could have sworn did one sooner than that, but maybe we didn't. I guess not.
I think it was back in November, around the 1st of November. So it's been that long. Oh. But anyway, we'd like to welcome the Slipster of Style, Michael Slipcase Felcher, for another mic check on Dead Pit Radio. It's good to have you back, Slippy. I know you're a busy man working on all these DVD and Blu-ray releases for, I guess, the upcoming Halloween season. Mm-hmm. Right now is your time to work on all those extra features and stuff like that. And I know that you pretty much have to have them done by about June, July, something like that?
Yeah, I like to order a large pizza with pepperoni and sausage and I like to be, what number is this?
This ain't Papa John, buddy.
Oh, shit. Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I was trying to, can we do this later?
No.
I have, the Papa John's is right next to the Dead Pit on the speed dial. I fucked the fuck up.
Oh.
Don't make me start fucking pulling out Larry Drake references. You don't want that to happen on this show.
We're not going to discuss Dr. Giggles on Blu-ray. I don't know whose soul you sold to the devil to make that happen. But that still pisses me off.
That is absolutely amazing, though. I can't even...
That is. Out of all the movies they could have chosen to put a double feature... I mean, out of all the horror features they have...
Yeah.
Yeah.
They choose that.
We have to blame Warner Brothers, I think. Warner Brothers is the ones doing that, so that's... Maybe they're going
to... another reason for me not to like Warner Brothers very much.
Yeah, as if you needed more reason.
That'll be the release that kickstarts the 488 Blu-rays at Walmart.
I love the fact
In answer to your previous question, most of the stuff that I work on, because it's Halloween-based, depending on the August to October time frame in which a lot of these are released, I would say, most of the stuff is due in May and June.
Right.
Now, one of the big things that I know you were working on, you have been working on for a long time, I don't know, how much more you've got to go, is, of course, the Corman titles that are coming out. Is there anything along those lines that you can talk about now?
Well, I can, I can go into full details on Death Race 2000, because they formally announced all the specs on that, I think just last week. And now there's a whole bunch of titles coming from them because they licensed a lot of the catalog. In fact, I'm not even sure of all the titles that they got.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not working on all of them because if I was working on all of them, three things would happen. One, I would be so criminally overworked I'd probably end up on top of a clock tower with a high-powered sniper rifle after about a month. Two, it would be criminally unfair to all the other people out there who actually do good work, and they've got their own people, their own producers that do a lot of great stuff, and they've been getting some other folks involved with some of the other releases. And three, there is no number three. So basically, you know, it just comes down to I'm on some of the releases, and they're really good titles, and hope they'll be willing to put me on some more in the future.
Right. Now,
but the first one out of the gate that I did was Death Race 2000.
Okay. And that, when is the release date on that one?
That is a very good question. I believe June.
Okay.
I believe they announced it for June. You know, it's funny. Sometimes I'm the last person to know what the street date is because I don't care what the street date is. I just need to know what my delivery date is. So, I mean, I'm finished with everything and it's all turned in. But I think they've announced it for early June, and it's Blu-ray and DVD.
Yeah, that's...
And the Blu-ray and DVD both have everything that has ever been on any Death Race 2000 DVD prior,
right,
plus the stuff that I did.
Yeah, that's the cool thing I know I've noticed that Shout Factory is doing is they're releasing DVD and Blu-rays. And I think Piranha is another one that they're going to be releasing on both.
Well, they...
Yeah.
I know that They just re-released Humanoids from the Deep, too, like I think DVD. I don't know if they did the Blu-ray for that one, but I know they re-released the DVD.
Yeah, they're doing Humanoids from the Deep. I mean, the first one out of the gate, I think that's going to street is Rock and Roll High School.
Yeah, I think the screener copies.
And they did a Blu-ray and a standard DVD of that. But they're not, like, right, for, you know, like, for example, they're doing a Blu-ray of Death Race 2000, but, like, for Bin World and Galaxy of Terror, they're not going to be Blu-rays right off the bat. They're just going to be DVDs only.
Right.
It just depends on, you know, what titles. And I think Star Crash is in the mix and Battle Beyond the Stars. That's another one I'm doing some work on is Battle Beyond the Stars. So there's, they're just kind of testing the waters right now because you can't go – the problem with Blu-rays, it costs a lot to make those now, and you can't go whole hog into something and – hope that it sells. You got to see where the market leads you, and there's always time to do it again later if they want.
You know, an idea that I was thinking about, and I was thinking about this the other day when I saw they have a few of the DVDs that are out that like the Grease DVD that has the leather jacket and Flashdance has a little gray, you know, top or whatever. How about this Slumber Party Massacre box set with lingerie over the DVD? The DVD would be something like a, you know, look like a nude breast. The front of it would be covering it up with the lingerie. That, now that'd be a seller right there.
You would think so. And who knows? I have no idea what they're. I mean, I know they're planning the Slumber Party Massacre series. I mean, that they announced that in their press release, but I don't know when that's coming. And I know they've got some people working on that. But so yeah, that should be really exciting. But that would be an interesting idea. I mean, why not do something like that?
Yeah, do something cool like that.
Do they have the rights to all those movies?
Probably.
I believe, yeah, again, I don't know exactly which. I mean, the Slumber Party Massacres, yes.
Okay.
I'm I don't know the full list of other titles. I don't want to speculate on what titles they've gotten if I'm not 100% on. So.
Okay. I'm thinking.
It's an ongoing relationship they have with Corman. So
if I was guessing, since they signed the deal with Corman, New Concord, which is his company, I would guess that they had like all of those titles that was released like when he had that company. Maybe I'm wrong, you know.
Well, it depends on if it was something they feel that was worth revisiting. I mean, they're not going to, just reissue automatically everything that's been out. Because see, what happened was Corman brought out a lot of titles on his own label, and then the catalog went over to Disney for a while. And Disney reissued some of them under a Roger Corman Classics collection or something. They didn't do that many of them.
Hmm.
So basically, and now it's, they went back, they ended up, Disney ended up canceling the deal or something happened there and it went back to Roger Corman. And Roger Corman is now licensing the titles over to Shout Factory. And the cool thing is, like I said, for titles that actually saw a release on the, like, for example, Death Race 2000, the original Corman release had an interview with Roger Corman on it with Leonard Maltin and a few extras, and then the one that they did for Disney, they did a reissue of Death Race 2000 on Disney's label that had a new interview with Corman and Mary Warrenoff and a new commentary and a couple other things. All that stuff is now being put back on the new Death Race 2000 from Shout Factory, in addition to five featurettes that I did and a new commentary with the editor, who was Louis Teague. Louis Teague was an assistant editor on that film, along with, she's going to kill me. I can't remember her name all of a sudden. Tina Hirsch. So the two editors of the film have done a commentary for it, in addition to all the other stuff. So it's packed. Plus the new transfer of the film, which I'm going to tell you right now looks, you've never seen Death Race 2000 before. I mean, the way this transfer looks, it's just outstanding.
Believe it or not, I've actually never seen it, so it'll be...
The movie's trip, that movie is so much fun. And the stories that we got from the people that did these featurettes was just, I mean, Corman's group back then, you know, that whole family of people that kind of came through that, the filmmaking community at that time that Roger Corman had going, and they all had such warm, affectionate, and yet very honest memories of what it was like to shoot these movies, because they didn't have any budget, they didn't have any time, but they had the opportunity to show what they could do, and we also had some really candid stories, like the costume designer on Death Race 2000 has hands down one of the best David Carradine stories I've ever heard, and it's one of those ones where you're like, holy crap, and the way, you know, it's just when you hear it, you'd just be like, oh my God, I can't, you know, you hear all the stuff about David Carradine, and then you hear something like this, and it's like, oh man, this guy was truly out there.
And then
considering some of the stuff, like, I don't know for sure what happened with his death, but he definitely lived a wild life, I'll say that.
I mean, that's certainly true. And then the weird thing is, I mean, we had we have an interview with the composer, Paul Chihara. That was his first score he ever did. And so he had some really vivid memories of doing this for, you know, literally just, he had no idea what he was doing. And he was just kind of like, you know, he didn't know how to compose for a movie. And so he's just kind of winging it. And the same with the costume designer. We had the two guys that designed and built the cars in the movie. We also have the art director in the featurette. And then we have another featurette that has... E. Melchior, who wrote the original story. The man's like 92 years old. But if I have a memory as good as his, he was amazing. And he tells a story about how he originally came up with the story that influenced Death Race 2000. It's really fascinating. But in addition to those, I interviewed David Carradine. Well, actually, I set up an interview that my producer went out and did with David Carradine at his house for Sundown, The Vampire in Retreat,
mm-hmm.
which was done, it was a year to the day that he died. I looked at the dates, and I went, holy shit, it was like June 8th or whatever it was. It was almost exactly 365 days before he died the following year. Anyway, David had a tendency in the interview to kind of go off on tangents every now and then. And during one of the talks, we were talking about cult movies, he goes off and talks about Death Race 2000 for almost 4 minutes straight. So it was just this wonderful little bit that we had, so we ended up being able to put that on the DVD as well. So we do have David Carradine actually talking about the movie, which is really nice.
Cool. Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
As far as the Death Race 2000 goes, if it's half as good as the remake with Jason Statham, I'm sure I'll like it.
Fucking movie. Oh, God.
You know, there's honestly, it's funny, that remake bears so little resemblance to the point of that story, it's not even funny.
Right.
When you see Death Race 2000, you'll be like, how is Death Race a remake of this movie? Aside from the fact that they both have cars in them.
I think that's probably all they thought about.
It totally missed the point of the story.
We often ask on the show, though, has there ever been a movie with Jason Statham in it that was good?
Yeah. Oh, no, Jason Statham's done quite a few good movies, actually. I like him quite a bit. I mean, I enjoy the Crank movies. They're fun as hell. I got to be honest.
Like, I like Snatch, so that's one at least.
I like Snatch, too, baby. Not the movie.
I like Snatch,
you know,
and the movie.
I wasn't going to go there, but it was just too obvious. I like Snatch. You can't go there. No, dude, he did a movie a couple years ago called The Bank Job, which is really, really good. You should really check that one out. That's a legitimately good film.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, though, like Jason Statham, Gerard Butler, Vinnie Jones.
Oh,
like,
sure.
All those guys just sort of go together to me for some reason. I mean, anytime I see them in a movie, I just don't want to see it.
Mm-hmm. What about Richard Gere?
Richard Gere is an officer and a gentleman, man. You better shut up.
Dude. Anytime I see Richard Gere anything, I just completely just...
Why are we talking about Richard Gere?
Because he's one of those fucking guys.
Bill is...
If you see him in a movie, you know the movie's not going to be any good.
Uncle Bill's just hiding...
Well, that's not true. I mean, Richard Gere's done quite a few good movies, actually.
He's hiding his love for Shall We Dance.
Well, that's not one of them.
Oh, yeah. You name me one good Richard Gere movie in the last 10 years. I dare you.
Well, the last 10 years?
The Mothman Prophecies.
Like I said.
You know what? I actually like the Mothman Prophecies.
Well, stop it. Well, Dale. Yeah, you can actually, yeah. We're not going to Point Pleasant or anything. We're not going to get into that.
I don't want to go to West Virginia, period.
No. So, is there any other of the Corman films that you can talk about that you worked on recently?
Well, I'm right knee-deep in the middle of Galaxy of Terror right now.
Oh yeah,
that's the big one, and that is shaping up to be a huge, huge, huge deal because we've had so many people coming out of the woodwork to talk about that movie.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of just when you look at the behind the scenes listing of people who worked on that, and even the cast, it's just amazing how many people who went on to really big careers after that. And we've had people coming out of the woodwork with behind the scenes photos and sketches and illustrations and just amazing stories about the making of the movie, and that one's going to be really special. I think that in the end, I can't swear to it. It's going to be neck and neck, but I may get more interviews for that than I have any other project I've ever done.
Wow.
Yeah, and that one, that didn't start out that way, but it was like one person led to another, and they knew two people from the movie, and they knew two friends, and so, you know, it just kept going on and on and on. And we just got done doing a whole series of interviews in Vancouver and San Francisco with a whole bunch of people that worked on it, and we're going to wrap up some stuff in L.A. I'm not at this time able to give you a list of all the people we've got because that's really Shout Factory's call to announce when that's going to be, and I don't want to get in trouble. So, but all I can say is that Galaxy of Terror will be a terrific special edition, and I fully expect it to be a Rondo Award winner next year.
Oh, God. Buddy, you fuck with me, I'll get Tom Chin on your ass. I'll be like, buddy, he's saying all kinds of shit on our show. Get him.
Who the hell's Tom Chin?
The guy at Shout Factory.
Oh, okay.
That's exactly how I'm going to be. I'm totally doing a wrestling thing. You better watch out for the Rondos next year. The Galaxy of Terror is coming for you.
What you going to do, brother?
But actually, though, okay, there's another one. There's another Shout Factory release that I just recently heard about. It's already up on their site, so, I mean, we can talk about it, which is the Stepfather Blu-ray. Which is coming
out.
Oh,
yeah.
Now, are you doing anything extra for the Blu-ray, or is it just the
actually,
same?
Actually, yeah. What we ended up doing, I mean, it's not much, but what's on there, I mean, first of all, obviously, the transfer of the movie's going to, you know, it's in HD. It looks even better than it did
on
DVD. The Stepfather Chronicles featurette that I did previously for that, we went back and did a new, because that was all shot in HD. So we went back in and re-edited the HD footage of the movie back in and did the whole thing back in HD. So the featurette will now be in full HD on the Blu-ray. Hmm. And we pulled out of storage and found the original theatrical trailer, the negative for the original theatrical trailer, which looked terrible on the last DVD because we didn't have any source for it at the time. So we're going to have that in HD. The trailer will be in HD on the Blu-ray, and we'll have standard def trailers for parts 2 and part 3 on the Blu-ray as well.
Mm-hmm.
We put some of those together, and I gave them a whole bunch of images for a really great still gallery as well. Mm. So all that stuff some of that's brand new for the Blu-ray. It's not much, but it fills it out a little bit more.
To me, though, I mean, they should sort of do what they did with Megan Fox on Jennifer's Body. Put a little sticker on the Blu-ray. you get to see Jill Shewellen naked, baby, in HD.
Yeah, that will go over really well. There's definitely an upgrade there. I mean, the theatrical trailer is essentially a brand new looking theatrical. The Stepfather Chronicles is in HD, and you get the trailers for parts 2 and 3 in a still gallery. So that, but none of that was available on the previous DVD. So. It's a little something, but I think it's worth it.
Now, there's definitely a lot of stuff coming out from Shout Factory. But, like, as far as the other studios go, though, I haven't really noticed a whole lot of... I mean, well, really, there's not a whole lot of stuff to release. We were talking about earlier, there's a few titles that could be re-released. They could do them better. You know, Fright Night.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, Fright Night's the obvious one. And I've been talking to Sony about that one off and on for quite some time, especially when we were working on Night of the Creeps. And it's funny, I think today they just announced they cast Anton Yelchin as Charlie Brewster in the movie, which I think is a good choice. He seems like a good choice for it. So I think it'll be interesting to see. I'm going to keep checking back in with Sony the further along this remake goes, because it just seems unlikely that they wouldn't want to do something with it on Blu-ray when the remake comes out. Because it looks like the remake's going to start shooting any day now. So
yeah, it's kind of bizarre, really, because, I mean, they did the whole the Night of the Creeps thing, which Night of the Creeps, everyone loves Night of the Creeps. But as far as just commercially successful, Fright Night was way more popular than Night of the Creeps.
Oh, yeah, it always has been, and it's been a very good seller for them on DVD, you know, even though it's never had anything on it. It's just one of those very well-known, recognized catalog titles that always had a shelf life, you know. It's one of those ones where you would have thought they would have done something with it sooner, because it was never a bastard stepchild or anything. It was always a very successful title for them.
I find it odd, though, the titles that they pick up for re-release, like... They re-released The Gate and The Wraith, and like and neither one of those movies really had any, like, there was no remake coming out or anything like that. There was no reason for them to re-release them, but yet they ignore stuff like Fright Night. Like, I can't figure that out at all.
Well, both of those were Lionsgate. That wasn't Sony.
Yeah, well, just in general terms of, like, re-releasing DVDs.
Well, trust me, if Lionsgate had Fright Night, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
They probably had, like, two versions up by now.
Apparently there's somebody at Lionsgate that actually understands.
You know, the thing, though, Lionsgate, that I like about Lionsgate a lot is the catalog titles on Blu-ray. Those son of a bitches are $10 when they come out, and within about a month, they're $8. So you gotta love that. I mean, even though it doesn't
A lot of them look really nice. I mean, I was very happy with how Monster Squad turned out, and they really allowed us to do a lot of great stuff with that.
Well, I was even watching, even though it's gotten pretty bad reviews, but I was watching, I don't know what you think about this movie, Kickboxer on Blu-ray. I didn't think it looked that bad, man. I mean, I
wouldn't know. I'm not a big, that was not one of my favorite early Van Damme, so.
Really?
Nah.
Were you more of a Bloodsport person?
No, actually, you know what? I really didn't come on board with Van Damme until Hard Target.
Oh, okay, I thought you were going to say Cyborg.
Nobody came on board on that
movie. No, God, no. Cyborg sucks.
Yeah, it sure
did. But no, I'm not a big early Van Damme guy. I guess Bloodsport out of all the ones he did. Because I remember seeing one, what was the one where he played his twin, Double Trouble or whatever?
Double Impact.
Double Trouble.
Double Trouble. I think Double Trouble was the one with the Barbarian twins in it, but that one was killed.
That's right, yeah, I think that's the one, whatever.
That was the one, I think, where Gerald Deodato did that.
I actually saw Double Impact in the theater, and it was just like, I just remember there was like a really dumb rap song, like, Double Impact. And I was like... Really?
Buddy, look.
I think the movie that ruined Van Damme's career, though, was the movie he did with Dennis Rodman. Like, I don't even
remember. Yeah, Double Team.
Yeah.
That was a
Double Team ended three careers at once. It ended the career of Van Damme, Rodman, and Mickey Rourke. Now, Mickey Rourke has gotten his career back, and to a large extent, so has Van Damme. But not Rodman.
Rodman's on celebrity rehab, though, so that's good.
He's on there with Mindy McCready, who's aged poorly.
Oh, yeah. That was, And then I remember, Sui Hark directed that one, a real talented Chinese director, done wonderful stuff, and you're just kind of like, what are you doing, man? Or maybe it was Ringo Lam. I can't remember
one of those two. The funny thing you mentioned, I think it was Hard Target earlier.
I love that movie.
My favorite thing about Hard Target is Wilford Brimley's Cajun accent in that. Like, that is...
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. I know. He's great in that movie. I think he's. But it is a little disconcerting at first because he's like, "Charles, is that you, Charles?" And you're like, "Oh my God, it's just like I have the diabetes."
Check your blood sugar and check it often, my friend.
Diabetes.
I know. It's like you put two arrows into this man here, and we go this way.
Like, you need to go on YouTube though and look at the diabetes rap.
I know those things are hilarious.
Anyway. I don't know how we do this.
It's all over the damn place.
We veered off topic again. Off target. Off hard target.
Off target.
But there is two titles that I always am going to ask you about until the fuckers come out. So I just might as well go ahead and like get it over with right now. The first one is Blood Diner. Is there any news about Blood Diner?
No news yet. I mean, like I said, Lionsgate did hire me on that, and it's just been kind of on hold until they can figure out really whether they want to release it. I'm hoping to talk to them in the next week to get an update on that and a couple other things. I'm still kind of discussing with them and figuring out maybe they want to bring it out Halloween this year or whatever. But I've got interviews in the can on that. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 interviews already filmed for Blood Diner. And then whenever things get back on track and actually are back in full production, your commentary track will happen. So... I mean, that's still going to happen. When I'm done with Blood Diner, there will be a deadpit.com commentary on that thing.
Yeah. Until they hear it, then they'll be like, no.
Well, here's the thing, though. How could you make an offensive, like a commentary that's more offensive than that movie?
You really couldn't. That's the thing.
Yeah, well, you know how. We'll do what we did on the Friday the 13th Part 5 commentary, which I thought turned out great. Just having some of the phone interviews that we'll figure out some other people to try to get for you guys. And I thought that really turned out great. And I think if we do that for this, it'd be even better. It's just on hold at the moment. But you know what? In a way, I'm actually relieved it's on hold for the moment because once it goes forward and I actually have to start working on it again, that means I will have to actually try to edit the Carla Crew interview that I have.
Hey,
I don't know how the hell I'm going to do that without putting a gun to my head. I really don't know.
Hey, that's kind of the same way we felt. Like that interview veered into madness. Like it was going straight. It took a sharp turn.
The interview that we got. I mean, my producer was out there at the place, the CIA, which is like the club, the weird kind of freaky nightclub place he has, and which is a very fitting setting for him. But watching the interview, all the clips that I got, it was like, how is it that he is more insane and more all over the map than the guy he plays in the movie? Mm-hmm. I mean, he makes the character in the movie is more understandable in a way. I mean, he comes out, and Carl's really nice. Don't get me, he was really pleasant to deal with, and I have nothing to say about him being, a jerk or anything like that. But the man is like, if you have a channel changer or remote, just flipping between all the channels on the cable TV and forgetting which show you were originally watching.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing thing. So I don't know, man. Editing that, I may just put up a title card that says this interview could not be edited.
Enjoy
as it happened.
I'll tell you another pretty cool interview that you could do. I mean, it'd be something that if you could just get a good impersonator, you could do it. And get somebody, from makeup effects to actually create another Uncle Anwar and do an interview.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, an interview with Uncle Anwar.
No, that would be funny as hell. And because we know where the special effects guy who worked on the film is. He's just not, we haven't contacted him yet, but we know we have his contact information. So who knows? I mean, with Blood Diner, if I can get back up and running and everything's cool with that, there's a lot of funky stuff I'd love to do for that. Because if there's any movie that warrants very unorthodox treatment, it's that one.
Oh, yeah.
So, we'll see. But no, I don't know yet, guys, but I'm keeping up on it because, like I said, I already have a lot invested in it. So.
Cool. Well, we actually have a series of questions that a fan of the show, Benji Gephardt, has asked. And it's actually, there's one in here that I'm kind of curious about, too. Any chance of a Halloween 2 and 3 special editions? It says both movies have huge followings, but the discs are bare bones.
Well, believe me, man, nothing would make me happier than to go and do special editions of those two films. And I've pitched them to Universal before. they have not shown any interest in reissuing those films. Now, what I'm hoping is that they're starting a line of double feature Blu-rays. Mm-hmm. I think what would make perfect sense is to do a double feature of Halloween's 2 and 3 with, you know, high-def transfers, which I know are already done. There's already HD transfers of both those films. And then do extras for both films together because so many people worked on both films mm-hmm. behind the scenes. It was the same crew and everything. And I think that would be great. Get all the deleted material from Part 2 on there. Make sure that's all on there. Get commentaries. And to be perfectly honest with you, I would, for me, out of the two, the one I'd be the most excited to work on would be Part 3 because I love Part 3. I think Part 3 is really underrated and misunderstood, and I know Tommy Lee Wallace will be up for doing it. I know Tom Atkins is up for doing it.
Right.
So that would be awesome. I would love to see that happen, but no plans in the works right now.
I wouldn't be surprised if they released the Blu-ray with just the movies. I mean, that would sort of make sense.
Yeah, in all likelihood, that's probably what will happen down the line.
Yeah.
I would imagine that's what they'll do. I would hope that they would do something, though.
Yeah, it's weird to me it's just weird to me that, first of all, there's like 15 different versions of Part 1. There's like 3 different versions of Part 4 and 5. There's like a collector's 10 of Part 5 for some ungodly reason, even though that movie's horrible. But
and they're actually, I heard that they're working on Blu-rays for 4 and 5 as well, or at least that's something that's going to be planned down the line.
There's absolutely nothing at all for 2 or 3. I mean, it's...
No, there never have been, and that's disappointing. I would love to see... I really would love to see something, and I would just die to do those. I mean, especially, like I said, Part 3. I think Part 3 is criminally misunderstood.
Yeah.
Well, it deserves some more attention.
Another one, though, I mean, I know a lot of people, I think that it would make for a good enough conversation piece, and they're making enough money at fucking conventions for over the last 15 years selling it, would be the production or the producer cut of Halloween 6. And release that on Blu-ray as well.
Well, you know, here's the funny thing about that one. Here's the funny thing about Halloween 6, which, by the way, I'm going to go on record right now saying I thoroughly despise.
Okay.
I've never been a fan of Halloween 6, and I've told this to a friend of mine, Dan Ferrans, who wrote the damn movie.
Right.
You know, and even he has conflicted feelings about it because a lot of stuff happened on that. Right now, the Miramax catalog, which includes Part 6, is up for sale. If that goes to a studio that's friendly to genre films, there could very easily be a producer's cut Blu-ray because Dan Ferrans knows how to get a hold of it. He knows where all the bodies are buried on that thing. And quite frankly, he's a damn good DVD producer in his own right, and he really is... I mean, he knows that so well that I would think he would be the logical choice to do that. Mm-hmm. Because I think he has enough... The thing about it is he was involved in the making of the movie, but he's also not so enamored with the final product that he would be just like, oh, it was all wine and roses, you know.
no, I don't think he would ever say that, just from having interviewed him.
Well, yeah, no, he's very honest with how that movie turned out and what went wrong and the things that should have been different about it and... Which is refreshing because sometimes a lot of people just tend to be protective of their work and won't really be honest about what happened. But you know.
I think part of the problem is too. So is like Dave Chappelle sort of just used his weight to get his brother the job as the director.
Not the Dave Chappelle. Yeah, that's funny.
Oh, that was good.
You know,
Another
one though from Benji. He wanted to know, do you buy DVDs at Big Lots? And how many DVDs do you have in your collection?
This guy's great.
Oh, do I buy DVDs at Big Lots? No. The answer is no. Not because I wouldn't be seen buying DVDs at Big Lots. I don't care. I just don't buy DVDs anymore. I'm almost exclusively Blu-ray. And even before that, I didn't really buy that many DVDs because there was a problem I was having, you know, 5-6 years ago. I was buying everything. And I mean, even if I'd seen it once or I hadn't, I was just buying it. And then at one point, I remember looking on my shelves, which were already bursting at the seams, and half of the movies in there were still wrapped. You know, I hadn't even opened them yet.
That sounds familiar.
Okay.
Yeah.
you know, am I ever going to watch this movie, really? And so it's gotten to the point where I don't, you know, I really don't buy a lot of them anymore. But Blu-rays I've become very aggressive in buying because I really like watching the stuff in HD, and they also don't take up as much room as all the DVDs and everything, and they're you know. So I would say I'm actually, I hardly ever will buy DVDs anymore unless it's only going to be a DVD-only thing.
Or an old TV show or something, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how many titles do you have in your collection, DVDs and Blu-rays, I guess?
Not that many. A few hundred, maybe. Mm. I mean, it's not, I don't know. I haven't really done a count, but it's, because I tend to rotate them out of a stock, too. If I, you know, if it is, you know, I don't really, haven't watched this movie in 5 years. I'm going to watch it in another 5 years. No, probably not. So I'll trade it in for something else. I keep my collection at the same number pretty much as I can, because like I said, otherwise I would need to rent out a whole other apartment just for my collection.
Right. He's got another one on here. This is actually a good one. We could all have like a round table on this. What is the best convention you've ever attended?
What is the best convention that I've ever attended? Now, are we talking in terms of best convention overall, or like the best single convention event I was at?
I think best single convention is what he's thinking.
Oh, okay. That's hard. That is really hard because it would be easier for me to identify the ones I haven't had fun at because I have a really good time at all of them.
I gotta say, though, for me, oddly enough, it's the first show still is my favorite show that I've been to, the Horror Find.
Sure. The first one's always the it's kind of like when you lose your virginity. You know, the first one's always kind of the most special, in a way. I mean, the first Cinema Wasteland that I went to, which was the first show I went to when I moved up here to Michigan, was the Dawn of the Dead reunion show, and I mean, that was just, that whole experience to me was just priceless. And oddly enough, the show that they did the following year, their second year show, was 3 days, four days after 9/11. And they still did the show because it was too far along at that point to cancel it. And there was an amazing spirit in the room that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were all just happy to be around each other and not focusing on what was going on. I'll always remember that show. That show was an amazing experience. But when you asked me the question, the first one that came to mind, though, was last year's April Cinema Wasteland when I brought Danny Steinman in for the first convention he'd really done. Between having him there and just hanging out, him meeting the fans, and then doing the Friday the 13th Part 5 commentary live with him at the show, that was just way too much fun. That was one of my favorite weekends I've ever had. So that was a blast. I've had fun at so many of them.
It's a weird question too, because I was thinking like, I mean, there's different areas that you can have fun in. Like you could ask me like, what was the best convention that I actually met guests at? Like I had the best time with
people there.
Or you could ask me like, what was the best convention I actually had the most fun at with just like, you know, hanging around the convention and stuff like that. It's just like 2004 Horrifying was by far the best one for like me meeting guests. Like I met Romero.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Met Romero and everybody from Dawn.
I met Savini.
But like as far as like having fun and like having a good time, I would actually say that this last Horrorhound was the best show for that I've ever been to.
Yeah, well, that last Horrorhound was awesome. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of bitching about the size of the crowd. Yeah, whatever. You know, at the end of the day, it was just 3 days of just total off the cuff madness, right. And it was fun. And I tell you, shows like that, what ends up being the most fun for me are things that I never really planned on when I went there. Like when we ended up sitting in the movie room and doing the commentary over Intruder.
Yeah, which by the way, absolutely fucking killed me. Like that was one of the best things ever.
We got to do that at Fright Night Film Fest. We've got to do one of those conferences.
We've already got it planned. I mean, I guess we can go ahead and announce it. I already passed everything over. We're definitely going to do it. So.
Oh, great. That's great. No, that was a lot of fun. For me, that was one of the highlights of that whole weekend was just sitting there doing that because it was so funny. We set up that thing, I got that pity award, which cracks everybody. I've told that story to about the pity award that cracks them up.
Right.
With the girls' soccer trophy, because it's just like that's somehow completely appropriate. That's right. And I love it. It's sitting right up next to my Reaper Award and my DVD exclusive award from a few years ago. It's sitting right there next to it. It looks proud to be a little retarded soccer girl just sitting there. It's just funny. But anyway, I love the fact that we did the thing. We announced my Bloody Valentine. Everybody left.
Right.
Because apparently no one wanted to watch my Bloody Valentine. We went to have dinner. We come back expecting there to be at least half the crowd still there. No one was there.
Yeah, there was nobody.
At all. And then we just ended up watching, doing a little bit of Mad Men, and then we did Intruder, and we just sat there just making comments to the whole thing. I just loved that. That was so much fun.
Yeah, there was like
the fun thing is the movie that we're going to end up doing in Fright Night, I think will lend itself more to a fun commentary than Intruder did. Intruder is a fun movie. Actually, I really, really like Intruder a lot, even though it's got some really dorky shit in it. But I really like Intruder a lot.
I don't know, man. It would take a whole lot to like top that commentary. That was
garbage day.
Yeah, that might do it.
Just you wait.
Oh, yeah,
that's gonna be a blast. Now, I'm really looking forward to Fright Night this year. I mean, with Roger Corman being there.
Oh yeah,
come on, that's just too good. You can't pass that shit.
He's got some cool stuff planned too. I guess I can hint at it for Dawn of the Dead fans as well. So.
Oh, cool! Very cool.
I got a couple.
But yeah, it's getting back to. I mean, like Fright Night Film Fest when I was there 2 years ago, was it the best show in terms of meeting guests or a dealer's room? No. Was it great in terms of hanging out with you guys? Fuck, it was one of the best.
Mm-hmm. And we went to the Wild and Woolly video.
It's hard to judge the shows overall because there's so many different facets to them.
Yeah.
Anyway, another question he's got here, though, is, and I don't know, I'm not sure how you want to answer this, but is Anchor Bay ever going to return to the greatness it once was?
So, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's kind of a hard question for me to answer because I was part of the company for 5 years, and I was there during really their golden years. You know, not that I'm saying me being there was why they had golden years, but I was one of a huge team of people there that was it was an amazing time, really, because of all the stuff we got to work on.
Well, I think, oddly enough, I don't know what you think about this, but Bill Lustig had a pretty big part in that, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely did. He and it was another gentleman, Jay Douglas, who was the VP of the company, who was responsible, really, for me working there.
Mm-hmm.
Those two were just like, it was fun because, you would just, back then, what's a cool movie to release? How about this one? Can we get the rights? Yeah, well, then let's go do it. Mm-hmm. That was the extent of the discussion that happened a lot of the times. It was handshake deals and, oh, why wouldn't we do this? This is a cool movie. Of course we're going to go do that. You know, it wasn't a lot of marketing decisions and calling in a whole bunch of, sales reports and finding out what the sales people thought. Yeah. You know, we didn't care. It's like, here, you go sell this. Shut up. You know, we know it's cool. We'll make it cool to the people who want to go buy it. And that was what was so special about those days. And when you look back at the stuff that we put out, I mean, it was just amazing. So, in answer to the question, will it ever be like that again? The answer is no. It couldn't be. The company's moved on. It's become a different company than it was 5 years ago. It's still going to put out a lot of really great quality releases, I'm sure. But
I think a big difference is, too, is now there's so many other similar companies doing what Anchor Bay did 10 years ago. You know, it's
well, in a way, yeah. I mean, it's funny because Anchor Bay's kind of moved away from doing the cult stuff. They really don't anymore. They have their own product now, and they're moving more into theatrical and more into self-generated projects. And with the exception of a few tentpole titles like Halloween or Evil Dead or something like that, no, they're not going to do titles like a lot of the stuff that Bill has now back with Blue Underground or what Shout Factory's doing. In many ways, working with Shout Factory reminds me a lot of what Anchor Bay was like back then, because they're really geared towards the collectors. And I think that's going to end up proving to be a very successful thing for them, because there really isn't anybody. Those there aren't going to be as many of those companies left at the end of the day. We need those companies because collectors will, there's always going to be that core group of collectors that are going to buy this stuff.
Yeah, if you think about it too, like, I mean, you got Blue Underground, but they're mostly re-releasing like Blu-rays at this point. They're not re-releasing a whole lot of new titles. You got Anchor Bay, which is, I guess, Stars now. They don't really do that anymore.
Yeah, doing a lot more mainstream stuff.
You
too,
really do need somebody. Like, I mean, Synapse still kind of does it, but they go so obscure sometimes that I'm even like, I don't have any idea what's going on.
Well, that's, I mean, that's Don's Taste of Movies, and they go by, hey, this is interesting, this is really cool, let's release that. And they don't, you know, conform necessarily to what, when everyone's hoping they're going to bring out, because it's not a matter of that, because sometimes they can't get those titles. Although I will say this, Dorm That Drip Blood is going to be a great
one. Yeah,
That is going to be a great one. And they've got some titles they're going to be announcing here probably in the next week or so that are going to satisfy a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, these titles are going to be announcing are titles that people have been asking for every company for a long, long time. So those are going to be really fun to see how people react to that. They're going to have a really good year this year.
Very cool. Now, is there any plans for them to go to any HD titles, or are they still sticking to Blu-ray? Or
they are going to do some Blu-ray stuff. DVD? I don't know what they are. You know, you'd have to ask Don that. I know that he's doing some stuff in HD, and there's some Blu-ray titles that are kind of on deck. But Synapse has been one of the reasons that Synapse Films has weathered the storm of all these independent companies kind of falling off left and right is because they have a very smart business model. Jerry Chandler and Don, especially Jerry, because Jerry runs the business side of things, he has played it very, very, very smart, and he has run the company in such a way that it could weather the times where if something failed or something didn't perform, it wouldn't automatically kill everything that they were doing. You know, because that's the problem. You know, some of these companies would go out and ship 15,000 units of these titles, thinking, oh, that's great. And then we get 10,000 of them back, and it would destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so Synapse has been very smart in that regard, which is why they're still around and still able to do the work at the quality level that they do. But by the same token, they're not going to rush headfirst into Blu-ray, do 10, 12 titles at a time on Blu-ray, and then, you know, take the chance of all that stuff, because that could kill a company.
Right.
That could kill a company of any size doing something like that. So they're playing it smart, and they're going to figure out which titles are the best for them to bring out. And they're definitely going to go into Blu-ray. There's no question about that.
I will say,
I can't wait for Luck or the Necrophagist on Blu-ray.
God.
That one is not on the list. I know that one.
As far as the quality of the releases, that Synapse is probably the best company in my mind. Is the quality of the stuff. I mean, not the quality of the movies, but the quality of the actual time that they put into making the DVDs and stuff. But now
Don is in many ways peerless in that regard. He is he'll make films that he did a film a little while ago called Singapore Sling.
Mm-hmm.
And if you saw all the work that went into that, you would be amazed. People just take it for granted. Oh, it looks great. It looked great. You must have found a great negative for that. I was like, no. They had the worst elements of the world on that, and it took them a couple of years to get it right. But, no other company would have taken the time on that title that they did. And I'm prejudiced because Don and Jerry have been close friends for years, and I've done a lot of work for them. But if I had a movie, I'd release it to them because I know it would get done right.
Yeah. Synapse needs to release End of the Pit on DVD.
You know what? They would be a good home for that, I think.
Personally. I agree. I completely agree.
Let's contact Kelly Marcotte and get him to contact Don May.
You should. They should absolutely do that. I think that would be the best home in the world for that thing. Are you kidding?
But now
I would love to see that.
Just going back to what I was saying, when I look at Shout Factory now.
Oh, and then you know what we could do? We could all record a commentary track for it.
Hell yeah.
We are actually going to record a commentary.
We'll do that if the DVD ever comes out anyway, I'm sure. So.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
But when I look at... When I look at the Shout Factory titles that are coming out now, and I look at, like, they put out Stepfather, then they put out Elvis, then they're putting out Rock and Roll High School, they're doing all the Corman titles.
Ooh,
like, it seems to me that they're the ones that are really picking up, like, the cult titles that people really... want to be back out there.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too. And that's why it's been so much fun to do work with them dating back on. Because the gentleman I work with over there was over at BCI and I had done Savage Streets with him, and he moved over to Shout Factory, so I knew that they were getting someone who really understood what kind of titles to go for, and he has been a great ally and friend, and, you know, he was responsible. I mean, I knew with Stepfather the rights were screwed up, and it was going to take a company stepping in to get the rights sorted out to make it work, and he convinced Shout Factory to do that. Otherwise, that movie would still be sitting in limbo. And, you know, it's obviously been a very successful release for them. Mm. And it's you know, doing the Corman titles, which is just a motherload of cult greatness. I mean, there's so many titles in there that are going to be a blast to hopefully get to work on. And, you know, even though, and it'll probably not happen, and because it probably just won't be a title we'll ever get around to, technically speaking, there is now a direct line of possibility. You know, they could option the Munchies movies.
Oh, God.
You know, that is a possibility.
And that means you would be working on, you would actually really be working on the fucking special features for the Munchies.
Now, that would be a great commentary for all of it.
I will say this. If Shout Factory ever decided to license the Munchies movies, or even just the first Munchies from Roger Corman,
mm-hmm.
I would work on that in a heartbeat. Just because... It's too perfect.
Yeah. We'd have to promote it's that forever.
But that's another one, though. We could all three get together and do a commentary. It'd be hilarious.
Do I have to watch the movie?
We would have to do that. I think after all this discussion, we would have no choice. There's like three movies like that. There's like, obviously, Blood Diner, you're going to do one for. If Munchies ever turned up, we would have to do one for Munchies. And you know if the Peanut Butter Solution ever turned up.
Yeah.
It could be Uncle Bill's very first time watching it, you know.
I've never seen it.
The last question this guy has is about Troll 2. He says he's a rabid fan and has a cult following. Shouldn't it have a better DVD release?
Well, the weird thing about that is I agree. First of all, I agree. Because it's only got the double feature with Troll 1 and Troll 2 that MGM did. Now, MGM could do, because it's already in HD, they could do a Blu-ray of it. They could do a Blu-ray double feature if they wanted to, or... They could do a new edition. The problem is there is absolutely no reason in the world to do special features for that because of Best Worst Movie.
Mm-hmm.
Best Worst Movie, you can't ask for anything better than that.
Right.
And it's owned by another company, so MGM would have to license that. But the only thing that the MGM could do is maybe do a commentary track with all those guys for the movie. That would really be about it. Any other interviews or anything would be completely unnecessary because of the Best Worst Movie.
To me, though, I mean, I would think that, I don't know who owns, like, if they're actually planning on releasing Best Worst Movie as a single DVD, I would think you would almost have to put it with a new DVD release of that movie.
I think the good thing about Best Worst Movie is I think it's a strong enough film, it doesn't need to be packaged with Troll 2. It makes you want to watch Troll 2 because it makes you, after going through all that, you just really want to see the whole thing as it plays out. But I think Best Worst Movie was structured in such a way, and this was very smart on their end, it doesn't play like a DVD extra. It plays like an actual documentary with a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Well, I'm so just thinking as far as a...
Yeah, it really, it really is.
Picked up.
As far as a marketing aspect, though, I mean, very similar to the Beware the Moon, which I thought was good enough to be by itself as well. You know, I mean, I definitely enjoyed Best Worst Movie.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know why it worked out that way. I don't know why. I mean, obviously, I think what ended up happening on Beware the Moon, and Paul Davis, the director, would have to correct me on this. I believe John Landis got involved and helped you get that over to Universal so that they got attention over that. I believe that's what happened on that, which was great for him because the documentary ended up getting seen by so many more people than it ever would have been seen by.
Right.
And, you know, even though, quite frankly, that pisses me off immensely because he just beat me twice at the Rondo Awards.
Yeah.
For, you know, because Night of the Creeps was up for Best DVD, and the Soul Patrol from Hell Round Hellraiser 2, the featurette I did with the Cenobites, was up for Best DVD Extra. And Beware the Moon and American Werewolf clobbered me in both. So now I'm like, damn it. If only that thing hadn't gotten out. But, you know, Paul deserved it for all the hard work he did on that.
Well,
I think that he won that, though, for that. I think that won for that documentary alone. I mean, I really do. Like, I don't think
that was all that was on it that was new.
Well,
right?
No, I mean, there was a lot of stuff on the disc. But I just think that because, like, of that documentary, it won. But if I look at something like Night of the Creeps, that was completely, like, all new. That whole thing was new. So
well,
I can't...
yeah, I agree. You know, and I would have liked to. I mean, I would. You know, personally, I would have voted. I voted for Night of the Creeps for best DVD, even though I'm highly prejudiced.
Right. Yeah. Well, another thing too, though.
But you know, but I can't argue against American Werewolf in London. You really can't come up with an argument. You know, so how do you say American Werewolf in London didn't deserve?
I think. Well, I think the Rondos, though, as far as like voting structure, I've noticed that a lot of the stuff is more along lines of like classic monster movies or, you know, werewolf movies.
Oh, sure,
movies,
yeah,
and
it definitely
like
dates
that.
Back to that because, I mean, you know the whole point, I mean, it's called the Rondo Awards, which is named after a character actor from the 1940s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, I certainly think they gear themselves more towards films, but the problem is, classic horror films, I mean, we were talking about classic horror films like The Thing from Another World in the 1980s, which at that time was 30 years ago. Well, 30 years ago from now was 1980.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so the classic films like Dawn of the Dead is a classic film now by that stretch, by that margin. So
no.
The Rondos, as well as a lot of other awards like that, have had to expand their appreciation to quote-unquote newer films. Which is fine by me because that means I'm eligible for some. Because nothing I ever did was nominated for a Rondo until last year. You know, it's nice to get recognition. It's always nice to get noticed. Although I personally am kind of, I have to be honest with you, this may be controversial. I'm glad you guys didn't win.
Well, thanks, but
that's nice.
No, but no, let me explain why.
Okay.
Let me explain why. I think that because of the nature of your show and because of the nature of who you guys are and the nature of the way that you know, you're uncensored, you're off the cuff, you are who you are, I think that is so special and so rare and so raw that if you ever got any serious validation for what you do, you'd become raving egomaniac assholes.
You may be right about that.
Actually, if you ever got any validation, if anyone ever said, congratulations, boys, you do good work and we're proud of it, you would just become the most intolerable sons of bitches. And it would just be like, it would ruin the show, and it would be like a bad Behind the Music episode on VH1. It would just like, you know, we'd find one of you dead in a gutter,
so,
you know, chained to a part of a hooker. We don't know where the rest of the hooker went. And, you know, it would just be a horrible, sad thing. And I think it would be the downfall of DeadPit.com.
So personally, I
can't help but be glad that has not happened yet. So congratulations on not winning and maintaining your independent spirit and your unvalidated awful nature.
At least
we beat Fangoria. That's all.
This is true. At least you found that.
Which I think, if you really, like, I was talking to him about this the other night. If you really think about that, like, us beating Fangoria at anything is fucking hilarious, really.
It is. But it goes with our slogan, though, what you were talking about, which is deadpit.com. 5 years of just unbiased mediocrity. That's what we try to live by.
That's the thing. So, yeah, like I said, if anyone ever rewarded you for your efforts, I mean, my God, the black hole of awfulness that would create, I just can't. I would hate to see that happen to you guys because then I would have to, you know, and then I'd have to just start calling in and bashing you guys on Rumor Radio all the time, and, you know, it would just be so unpleasant, and I don't want to do that.
I want to bleep out what station you just mentioned.
Like,
no, actually, and it's true. I mean, but I will say this: I didn't vote for any of you guys. I voted for Uncle Mudfucker's Hillbilly Raccoon Show of Horror Death or whatever the hell
well,
it was.
That's Uncle Bill's other show.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Captain Frogball's Lockjaw Hour or whatever the hell it was.
Let's hope to Boris Karloff's grandniece.
Because I swear to God, there was that one they nominated. I don't know if it was last year. I had never heard of it before, and it was just like, who nominated this and why? It was like, what, and it was something stupid like that, like, you know, Uncle Country Joe's, you know, towering inferno of bizarre horror shit or something. I don't know. It was like, what?
Uncle Jim's Stonebook Radio Hour.
It was like, what?
But seriously,
old Papaw's finger fuck.
You know, I won't say that I'm glad that we didn't win, but I will say that the shit that we're going to say about not winning will be infinitely more funny than the shit we would have said about winning.
Yeah, because really, at the end of the day, when you win, all you can do is go, Thanks.
You know what we could do, though? We was talking about this. And you're not a wrestling fan, so you don't know anything about the angle or anything. But what we could do is, I know none of the Rue Morgue motherfuckers are going to be at Wonderfest. We're going to be there.
Yeah.
We'll accept the award for them.
We can accept the award for them. We're going to melt that fucking award down into a big, you know, Mr. T chain. And we're going to wear that motherfucker.
I'm going to be at Wonderfest, too, because definitely I want to be there for the, you know, hopefully for the commentary award. And that'll be fun.
Well, I'm going to be there to get within arm's reach of Linnea Quigley.
Yeah.
Well, that's right, yeah, Linnea. You're going to finally meet Linnea, aren't you?
Yeah, I've got like five things for her to sign. She's going to make about $200 off me alone.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, that's finally good. I mean, fate has kept you guys apart from her for way too long.
She'll probably cancel.
She probably will. But
well,
I do, though.
Don't say that. But no, she'll probably. She's been good about keeping the dates lately, and last time I saw her, she was in really good spirits. So, good God, finally we're going to meet her. Jesus Christ.
I know. It seems like it's been for, like, ever. I've been, like, she's the one person out of anybody that I wanted to meet for this long.
And actually,
and every reason that you had for not meeting her ended up being something really dumb. It was just like, you know, she didn't show up, or, you know, lightning struck your van and you plummeted off a cliff and were in a coma three years or something.
That
like,
one
what
sucked.
The fuck?
Yeah.
He got gonorrhea.
I got cat AIDS that year.
You had rickets. That
something else is cool, though, too, man. Like, James Cairn is going to be. I never thought he did conventions before. So
he's done a few. Yeah, he's done a few Return of the Living Dead themed ones. Yeah. God, James Cairn is awesome. He is, there's a really fun dude to have.
Yeah, we would love to get him on the show somehow.
Mm, we will.
Oh, and you know, the stories that guy could tell you, because he's done a lot of shit, man. I mean, between Return of the Living Dead and Poltergeist alone, that guy has some amazing stories.
Okay, there is two things I want to ask you about, though, while I've still got you on here before we go. The two more titles that I'm sure that everybody's wondering about, and I'm kind of curious about this myself. The first one, though, is because they did this at the last Horror Hound, I was wondering, like, if there was any kind of news on the Nightbreed DVD, if there's any kind of, like, movement on that since they showed the, you know, uncut version and all that.
You know, that is, unfortunately, I haven't heard much of anything, and that's a Morgan Creek Warner Brothers decision, so you can imagine how likely that is.
Okay.
Which is a shame, because the problem is, in terms of just getting Nightbreed released on Blu-ray, probably not that difficult, because they could just use the master they have now. The problem is, there's so much reconstruction that would go, I mean, it'd be literally starting from scratch or re-editing the movie all over again. And which I think would be worth it, because the movie is so radically different with all the footage. It's like you're watching a whole new, just like twice the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love Nightbreed, but even when I first saw it, I could tell there were huge chunks of the movie just missing.
The version, the version they show, I guess it was just a really raw cut. You could tell they didn't work on it at all.
It was a work print. This was before that version that they showed was one that was done before they had finished many of the special effects scenes and before Danny Elfman had even turned a score in yet.
Right.
So there wasn't any of that. So it really wasn't even a director's cut, because it was still in the editing stage at that point. But it was an assembly that existed before Morgan Creek came in and started ransacking the film and kind of changing it all wholesale, which is a real problem with the movie. The movie that we have now, the short version of it, is just a very schizophrenic, it feels like a film that you're watching, and all of a sudden the chapter skips over chapters 2 and 3, and you go straight to 4.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And then you watch 4, 5, and 6, and you all of a sudden you're on chapter 10. You're like, well, what the fuck happened here? And I would love to see I would think that with Lord of the Rings and all these other films that are very, in many ways very similar to that, Nightbreed's not a horror film in many ways. It's much more of a fantasy movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think a 2-hour-plus version of that, or maybe even a 3-hour version, depending on how much footage there is, would play wonderfully. But it's, how do you convince them that that's worth that much of an investment?
That's true.
That's the tricky thing.
Because it never really was that popular of a movie anyway, so.
Well, it is a cult
movie.
Yeah,
it did well enough on video, but yeah, the theatrical campaign for that movie was a total fucking disaster.
Right.
I mean, they had all these creatures in the movie. The trailers and the poster made it look like a slasher movie. And which was like, guys, that's like 10% of this movie. And even that is not the whole story. And it's like there's monsters and creatures and this fantastical mid-world and everything, and they showed none of that. All they showed was just David Cronenberg running around the mask, slicing up bitches in a house.
Mm-hmm.
And the poster was just like two big bug eyes with a hand to look at the cover. It looked like the poster for Bad Dreams. And it's like, what is this? This is not... Where are the creatures? Where's the reason that you'd see this movie, you know? It was a total botch.
I'm not even sure how you would have marketed that movie, though. Like, how the hell could you market it? It was, like, so different than anything I had ever seen when it came out.
Well, you know what the strange thing is? They would have, the video release had the wonderful image of all Craig Sheffer standing with all the monsters behind him, infinitely better. I mean, just give the people an idea of what the movie's about. I mean, Hellraiser was not an easy marketing challenge either. But they did a very smart thing. They put an image of a character that looks so fucking weird on the cover and just said, okay, you've not seen this before, aren't you intrigued?
Mm-hmm.
It's basically what that poster said. It says, like, if you want to find out what the hell this weird-ass movie's about, go buy a ticket. That's what they should have done with Nightbreed, and they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. The other one, though.
I would actually donate my services to them. To let me work on that.
You better not say that.
Yeah, you better not say that. It could happen. Yeah.
They have you working on it for 3 years and not pay you anything.
You know what? I mean, as long as they paid my expenses so I wasn't out of pocket on anything, I would absolutely do it.
That's Warner Brothers, though, man.
Special movie.
Yeah, they...
I would absolutely do it.
That's one that people have been waiting on for a really long time to have a decent DVD release.
Here's the thing about Warner Brothers, though.
Yeah.
They had all the extras on Creepshow at their disposal. They didn't even want to spend the money to license them to put them out. So,
Oh, really? I didn't know about that.
You're telling me.
Well, that's news to me.
So that'll, tell you
go
how.
Find that bottle of vodka.
And that's fucking Creepshow, man. That's a classic. So they're not going to. I doubt them ever releasing Nightbreed uncut.
You know what? I doubt it too, but you know what? Never thought I'd see Night of the Creeps come out the way it did either, so
yeah,
stranger things have happened.
The only other one I wanted to mention, though, was, and I actually have been asked about this at least 3 or 4 times in the last month. I have no idea why, but there seem to be like a bigger cult following for this movie now, like as the years go by, which is Waxwork. Is there any, like, because that DVD is fucking horrible, by the way.
Yeah, you know what? I've talked to Lionsgate about that, and there was some movement on that for a little while, and then nothing happened. That's something I'll have to ask them more about, because the problem is there is an HD transfer of the first movie done, and it's the uncut version, by the way.
Oh, God.
Which is good. The problem is the sequel, which the plan would be to bring them both out and do like a Waxwork collection, which I think makes perfect sense. I don't think there's a new transfer of the second film that's been done since it came out back in 93 or whatever the hell it was. So there would be some money in that, and it's just a matter of how much money do they want to spend on titles that really have still, a limited audience. But I think we could make that happen. I think that still could be something that if I keep talking to them about it, they'll eventually decide to do. Good news is on that. When I did my interview with David Carradine for Sundown, I actually did record some stuff in advance for him about his time on Waxwork 2. So I do have a David Carradine interview for Waxwork 2 already in the can.
Cool.
So that would be his last thing that he ever, his last interview that'll probably ever be seen whenever Waxwork comes out. Cause I would love, and no, Anthony Hickox is totally on board with doing it. Cause when I worked with him on Sundown, he was like, oh, Waxwork, hell yes, absolutely.
Sure.
And a lot of people would.
I would think it would be easy to like get Zach Galligan and
everybody.
So
really.
Zach Galligan will do it. Zach Galligan, my producer is Anya, reps him for.
Yeah, that is right.
So I mean, yeah, Zach. I've already talked to Zach about it, and there's a whole bunch of people associated with him. You know, if I happen to be around Bruce at the time, I bet he'd even talk about his part in part two. You know, there's a lot of people that would do that. I mean, I think both those movies are a lot of fun, and I would love to see them come out. So, you know what? I wouldn't say it's impossible. I would say there's actually probably a road to getting those released. It's just a matter of, it's all about a matter of money. How do you make the money work, you know?
Well, the only other problem, too, is getting Deborah Foreman away from her yoga long enough to...
You know what? I would love. You know what? I honestly think we were very close to having her on Sundown. I just think if we had maybe had another chance to run at her about it again, she might have done it.
Yeah.
But you never know with some of these people. You know, like Terry McMinn from Chainsaw Massacre, when I first approached her about doing the Flesh Wounds documentary, I even met with her in person. I had lunch with her in Venice, California, like about it, and she was like, no, I really don't feel comfortable about this. She was very, very recalcitrant, very shy about the whole thing. Now you talk to Terry, she's like the biggest, she loves the conventions and talking about the movie and everything. So that was a complete turnaround, and I've seen it happen with a lot of the actresses. Jill Schoelen has turned around on that. You know, quite a few actresses who were just like, oh, I don't know if I want to. So I bet you anything, if the circumstances were right, we could get Deborah Foreman. I bet you anything we could.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I mean, I hope you had, I hope you have better luck, especially if you do like a waxwork, any kind of thing with the waxwork, because you got to have her on there. I mean,
absolutely. I would want.
She's
definitely
huge part of that. The reason why I think that movie is as good as it is.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, we've definitely kept you on here. I think this has been the longest mic check ever, but it's definitely been. Entertaining.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah, it's been great. Wonderful, yeah.
Hey, buddy.
Come on.
You could be on Rue Morgue Radio right now. That guy could be like, hey, buddy, what's going on? You got the DVD releases coming out,
guy? Let's talk about the new Kyle Kraft dinner that's coming out this week, buddy.
And then the other guy, Birmingham,
right? I'm not from Scotland.
You know, the funny thing is, the weird thing is sometimes when you, I mean, I have this happen a lot when I would do chats, online chats for Anchor Bay. You know, people come in and say, what about this title? I really want to ask you about this title. It's like, Warner Brothers owns it. We can't get it. And then they'd be like, well, fuck you. what do you want me to do? I mean, it's not like, and so I get a lot of those questions. So I'm kind of glad we did it this way because you could look at it and go, well, there's no, you know, why ask him this? I already know the answer to it. So the
bottom line is that if Warner Brothers owns it, just don't even ask.
But I truly was. I wasn't afraid to die. I knew that was coming to all of us. But what I was afraid of was diabetes.
Forget your troubles. Come on, get happy.
Diabetes.
I've done things I shouldn't do.
Diabetes.
Do the best you can with what you got.
Diabetes.
And I would encourage all of you.
Diabetes.
Forget your troubles. Come on, get happy.
Diabetes.
I've done things I shouldn't do.
Diabetes.
Do the best you can with what you got.
Diabetes.
And I would encourage all of you.
That I might have to live a long time feeling like I felt. And I really wasn't interested in that. So finally, at the urging of my family.
So welcome.
Welcome back.
Welcome to the fan portion of the programming. Since we won't be taking phone calls tonight, we will be answering
the
fan.
Answering your fan queries.
And I hope, actually, big thanks once again to Michael Felscher for taking the time out to do an hour and a half, really, of mic check stuff.
Yeah. And Felscher, we'll be there with you at Wonderfest when you accept your Rondo Award so you can hold it high in glory.
I'm going to be throwing fried chicken pieces at whoever accepts for best audio podcast.
But, yeah, so you can marvel at that award. But let's just remember this. That award is shit. Compared to your Petey Award. You wouldn't let me finish. You just fucking left.
Well, I couldn't. Like, when you said shit, I thought you were just going to
end
it there.
Like this. The Petey Award, that's one award. That's the only Petey Award.
So. There'd never be another one. We ain't making any more of them ever.
So anyway, fan questions and queries. Let's go ahead and get started. What do you have first up over there, Uncle Bill?
Our good friend Cody LL writes in.
Cody!
And he's a little bit upset because he says, I appreciated you guys going through that huge list of films.
Well, you're welcome, Cody.
I made you go through. But you actually missed The Relic and never discussed it.
Nah, nobody misses The Relic. Fuck The Relic.
Could you give me your opinion on it? I can guess from the way you reacted in the news section last week when you heard it was coming on Blu-ray that you don't think much of it. I tell you my honest opinion. I saw it one time right around the time it came out. I don't remember anything about it. It's not a movie that everyone go back and watch.
I might buy it on Blu-ray if it hits $8.
Yeah, I don't think I'd even buy it on Blu-ray if it hit $8.
It's already $10, though. Our prediction was close. We said, you know, it might debut for $8, but it'll be $8 here shortly, I'm sure.
I think it has Penelope Ann Miller in it. That might be the only thing good about it.
And it's from a shitty year for horror, 1997, I think. It came out in 97.
Oh, no.
That's just a shitty year for films in general.
It is,
like,
really.
What the fuck? I was thinking about just by year, because with me and movies, the year, I always put all the movies together, what year they came out and stuff like that. I can't think of much of fucking anything that came out in 97 that was worth a fuck. As good as it gets, that might be one of the better movies. I think that was 97.
Mm-hmm. I have no idea. He says, on the same topic, when Uncle Bill said that he thought Man's Best Friend was better than Cujo, my jaw hit the floor. I respect your opinion, but I honestly don't understand how you could think that movie is better than Cujo. I guess it's better than Rottweiler, though. I respect...
Ain't much worse than Rottweiler.
To me, Cujo is an incredibly slow and boring movie, and that's just the bottom line.
I think, though, the thing about Cujo that's interesting to me more than the movie itself is, like, Lewis Teague's style of direction is really good. Like,
well,
you can't
once
deny
you
that.
Get to the last 10 minutes, I mean, that movie is okay, but, like, the lead-up to that last 10 minutes is excruciatingly hard for me to get through.
Yeah.
So, as far in terms of entertainment value, like, I do like Man's Best Friend better than Cujo. And, I respect your opinion, but
I like it better. Oh, no.
So he says, one last thing. I enjoyed the extra disc of that bombastic bundle. I especially loved the segment during Man Beast when CK farted and pretty much brought it all to a halt. That didn't ever happen. My question is, did you guys find it constraining that you were on TV and couldn't cuss and do the show like you normally do? Thanks for putting up with me, and keep being awesome.
Okay. No problem, Cody. We appreciate it, brother.
Did we find it constraining? Actually, it was...
I think it was...
It was hard, and like it didn't feel
to me,
natural.
I don't know about you. I saw it as sort of a challenge to make something at least halfway entertaining and not use foul language.
Yeah, it's not something I'd ever want to do again, because I, like... just thrive on profanity.
With the gas and all that, we were sort of teetering on that, but we never did.
We were rebelling against the system, yeah.
So, anyway, Barry West from Endurance Productions, folks, on YouTube, sent us this one on email, and luckily we caught it. The best way to post a message would be on the message board. Usually if somebody emails us, we will rarely catch it, but I caught this one. It says, first of all, I just want to say you guys are the greatest in horology radio. I've been listening for a few years now, and just keeps getting better and better. We appreciate it. Now that it's springtime, I've been combing the local video stores and flea markets for rare movie finds, etc. Recently, even though I've fallen in love with the superior format that is Blu-ray, well, good for you, sir, I have found myself picking up a few VHS tapes for some horror and action titles I would consider might be collectible one day, now that VHS is basically dead and due to the cover art. My question is, do you guys think that in the long run, VHS titles are worth collecting in comparison to, say, movie posters? Take care, dudes, and keep on rocking. B. Jr. from North Kakalaki.
I'm guessing he means, like, is it worth collecting VHS for the art, and will it one day be a collectible?
Yeah, I think it's already a collectible.
Here's the thing. When you look at collecting anything, like, you pretty much, with stuff like posters, it better just be something that you really like and you want to have to admire, because you can never, ever tell what's going to be worth anything, like, in any given amount of time.
Bottom line is, though, I mean, I think... The posters and VHS, in a way, are kind of similar, because they're never going to be making them again. You know, of course, there's reprints of posters and stuff like that, but they're never going to be making the VHSs again. That's gone, okay? And you have your golden era VHS, the big box formats, you know, the studios that are long gone, you know, like Unicorn Video, Thriller Video, Prism, Vestron, you know, Video Treasures, you can go on, Media Home Entertainment, you know. And that's always going to be, that's collectible to this day. Some of those titles are easier to find than others. Some of them are extremely valuable, you know. And I think that the market sort of, like, you know, if you see people on YouTube, or I mean on eBay, and they just have a tape on there, no matter what tape it is, if it is listed as $80 buy it now, that drives the fucking price up, period, when people see that. And it's sort of weird because, like, a lot of titles, I'm sure a lot of these titles aren't that hard to find, you know. But it's weird how the marketplace, like the online marketplace sort of drives the prices of these things. You know, cause most of the, I've noticed that most of the big box videos and all that stuff, you know, and I still occasionally, I'll look on eBay just for curiosity's sake, just to see what's on there. And I would say 90% of them are all a price that is set by the seller. They won't let the tape go to auction because ultimately it's not going to be anywhere near the level they have on the buy it now price.
Well, here's what I've noticed from being somebody that's collected almost everything you can possibly collect my whole life, like starting out with probably like Garbage Pail Kids cards, then moving to like baseball cards, then moving to basketball cards, then moving to comic books, then
wrestling figures.
Nobody, when
then
somebody,
your butt plug collection.
Yeah, when somebody starts collecting something, like they don't envision that there'll be a time when it just completely won't be worth shit. But in my experience, that happens like almost all the time. So if you really want to get down to it, you better just collect stuff because you want to collect it. Because, I mean, we've been burned. I know I've been burned on almost all that stuff.
Well,
all that stuff, like, is completely.
In a way, though.
Here's the thing, though. For 30 years before I even started collecting it, baseball cards were worth, like, they went up and up and up and up. And then the market just completely got saturated. And I don't know anybody that collects baseball cards anymore.
Yeah,
and they're not worth shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even
and
the ones,
any of that could happen, you know, to the.
Yeah,
to
I was definitely. Stuff. I was into the basketball card stuff big. You know, I was like 12 or 13 years old, and the stuff was valuable then,
yeah.
You know. But now, I mean, you look at all the stuff that you got and you've saved that was worth a lot of money. Kind of shitty. Now, if you go back. But the different thing, that's the difference, I think, though, is that ultimately those things were mass produced. Okay? With posters, theatrical posters. Videotapes, a lot of the times, a lot of those videos never made it to retail shelves. Those were rental tapes.
But the thing that drives, like, the market for especially, like, stuff like posters is the people.
Yeah.
So, like, if that interest ever dies, then that shit ain't going to be worth nothing.
I mean, a lot of people don't realize this, but that's how we got a lot of our collection before, you know, 5-6 years ago. Horror was kind of popular, you know, but not as popular. Definitely not the collectible market. So
yeah.
We got a lot of this stuff really good price. And eventually, you know, it will go down. It goes back and forth. But with something like, you know, pretty much what he was saying, you don't want to collect something unless you really like it. Like with me, collecting Madman shit, you know. I'm never going to fucking sell any of this shit. I'm going to keep it. So you don't really give a fuck what it's worth.
Well, yeah, right now I will say that if anybody's like thinking about selling your stuff, it's definitely like a seller's market right now. I mean, the shit, I think it's as topped out as it'll ever be right now when you go on eBay and look at the price the fucking posters and stuff are going on for. Like, if you're thinking about it, you might as well.
Yeah, so.
It'd end up like us where you have like fucking closets full of shit you can't get rid of now, like wrestling figures. Oh, shit.
That still makes me mad.
Yeah.
Anyway.
At one time, we probably could have sold stuff for something. Like, not now.
Well, I mean, actually, still, though, the old figures are still kind of valuable. Not as valuable as they were when we got them, I don't think. But, you know, the LJNs and the Hasbros and stuff are still worth decent.
Oh, he also, that's another question. I was reading somebody else's shit. Okay, so.
Rafi
Gutman or
Raffy.
Rafe Gutman, however you want to say it.
Rafe Hollister.
Writes in and says, with the impressive turnout at Horror Hound, and he says, thanks for the reports and videos, by the way, do you gentlemen believe the horror business is on the cusp of a boom? There are some who theorize that poor economic times are fertile fields for scary films. I'd appreciate an educated opinion from two certified horologists. Let's see.
Uncle Bill, baby, your ass is a fertile field for Sonny Landham.
Oh, Lord.
That's funny. More from Dusty into Sonny.
Yeah, it is. Is the horror business on the cusp of a boom? I don't know.
I kind of see it as going a little bit down.
Yeah. It seems like it's either like at its peak right now and maybe moving downward. or maybe like it's like plateaued at this point, but I don't see that it's like going to go up anymore in this point. Yeah. I mean, they pretty much after Nightmare on Elm Street, they've run out of huge films to remake, and I think that's going to hurt them
a lot.
Well,
you do notice though, a lot of the studios aren't taking hardly any chances with original horror films now. Like new stuff that, like a new slasher movie or new zombie movie or new anything horror related, you really just don't see it anymore.
Yeah. Now on the subject of like a convention, it's pretty much conventions are as popular now, probably more popular now than they've ever been.
Yeah.
Horror conventions. Now that aspect of it, I think, is really like gone fucking crazy.
Well, and the cool thing about horror conventions now is too. With the internet, what makes it different than like conventions that was even, you know, 15, 16 years ago. A lot of these guys now, you can find them on Facebook and shit. Like the people, you know, Sean Clark's representing all the people from My Bloody Valentine, you know. A lot of those guys that you didn't know where they were, you know, they're not as hard to find now. So that's another thing too. A lot of the reunions and people that had never done shows before. Like my humble opinion. The driving force of that Whorehound show was Clive Barker. The majority of the people I talked to wanted to meet Clive Barker. He was the reason they came. At the same time, while they were there, they were definitely getting in line for George Romero as well. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But Clive Barker definitely was the difference maker of that show. That's what shows need, in my opinion. You need that one, at least one eclectic guest that never does shows. And that's how you make it a success. And, you know, I would love to see, I think Fright Night with Roger Corman, that's very similar. I don't know if it'll be as successful as, you know, Clive Barker. I think, you know, last year with Fright Night, Michael Madsen, nobody's thought that would happen. And that's the key, I think, to a successful show is bringing that one guy in there, one woman, whatever, that doesn't do hardly any.
Mm-hmm. He says, P.S. Uncle Bill about Elvira. Are they real? And did you cop a feel? No, I didn't cop a feel because she had like the glamazon with her that looked like she'd rip my dick off if I like even looked at her cross-eyed.
Flat out tell you though, I don't know if I said this in a video or anything. We did our little whorehound haul thing. Elvira, and there's certain women that do this that I've noticed that if you get up close to them, you can tell they've aged, they're a little saggy, you know. Elvira is fucking still like a 10, you know.
Yeah, her...
Like, up close, like, I mean, it's amazing.
Her body and her, like, boobs, that's... that is really like a national treasure. Like, I can't believe how well she's held up.
Well, could you imagine, though, she's almost 60 years old, man.
I know.
Almost 60 years old. Could you imagine what she looked like 20 years ago in person? You'd almost be wanting to fucking stick your dick out and fucking start jacking on her or something. You know?
Well, I'm sure somebody done it. Gone up through. Oh, God. Woo.
Yeah. But anyway. I thought she was nice. I mean, we didn't really get to say much to her, but.
She's a lovely woman. She really wanted to sell me some stuff, but unfortunately I didn't have money to buy anything.
Yeah, she wanted you to buy one of her shitty DVDs.
And she goes,
If I do another, if there's another convention with her on it, I'll get her to sign something else.
She goes, you ever seen my movie Haunted Hills? I was like, yeah.
I've seen it. It ain't no good.
Like, I think she wanted me to say something about it, but I was like, I've seen it.
I've seen it. It's shitty.
It is. It's real bad.
So anyway, that's the end of the fan questions. Isn't that right? Don't have any more.
No, we don't. That's it.
But yeah, if you guys want to ask us questions on the Dead Pit message board, best way to go do it now.
Right now.
We're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to review some movies.
This is going to be a fun segment, I have a feeling.
So anyway, we will be back after this short break here on DeadPit.com.
The Fog and Phantasm. Two terrorific hits together to grab you. Phantasm. If it doesn't kill you this time, you've been dead too long. And from the creator of Halloween, John Carpenter's The Fog. Lock your windows. Bolt your doors. There's something in the fog. The Fog and Phantasm. No one can escape from now. Rated R. We'll be right back.
Romero, director of Diary of the Dead, and you're listening to Dead Pit Radio.
Howdy, everybody, and welcome back to Dead Pit. I'm a creep Kentucky.
And I'm a Billy Lowe.
We're going to get to some movie reviews here in just a second. We probably should. We have some announcements and stuff as well. I think sometime this weekend, if I have time, I'm going to do the poster update. It's actually chapter 9, or part 9, I guess, of the movie poster update. So
everybody's all excited, yeah.
Mark the fuck out.
To be honest, like, we do have a lot of killer stuff.
That's true. And we want to show you all. Look here. Look here, dummies.
Yeah. And also, I think we're going to do Saturday Nightmares. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do, but we will do something interesting.
Yeah, well, I assumed that we were going to do something on Nightmare on Elm Street since the shit's coming out. I think by the next time we do the...
It comes out on the 30th.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, so maybe we could wait for the weekend before that or something.
Oh, God.
Let's do something on Killer Doll Movies.
Happy Killer.
Yeah.
We'll do Killer Doll Movies. Okay. So those are always fun. Those are, we did the films of Frank Henenlotter last week, and that was fun, and now we're going to do Killer Doll Movies. So,
yeah.
So, anyway. I guess that's it. As far as the show next week, we're going to be doing an interview. I don't know if we're going to have that on the show next week or the week after. It just depends.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know either, but I'm thinking we will, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll let you guys know on the midweek obliteration. It's going to be a lot of fun. Also, we appreciate, even though we didn't win, Uncle Bill, I definitely wanted to thank everybody in all seriousness that voted for us. We did come in number 2. I mean, you know, whether or not a lot of people think that's a big deal or not, I think it's kind of a big deal because bottom line is this. We're competing with Rue Morgue and Fangoria, two corporate entities.
Plus, they have magazines. They both have, like, that's the basis of their fame and popularity, I guess. They have. I mean, we've only got Dead Pit Quarterly, but that, I mean, we haven't really worked on that much.
Yeah, well, in addition to that, also... ads, full page ads in each of the magazines for the radio show. What do we don't have that, do we, Uncle Bill?
No.
What we have is a grassroots fan base. And
what we've got is the power of Kentucky. No. So fuck it.
So, you know, definitely appreciate it. And, you know, next year, who knows? Things could get interesting. We moved up a notch from last year, from 3rd to 2nd. Next year, who knows? We may move up a notch again, Uncle Bill. I want that award.
We're climbing the rungs.
I won't be like one by one. I won't be like fucking Rob Scott.
I'm going to do whatever it takes to get that fucking award now.
By any means necessary.
That's right.
We're going to pull Malcolm X on.
We're the nation of masturbation.
So, yeah, we don't really have any other announcements.
No other announcements. But again, I appreciate everyone that voted, took the time out to vote, because it's not the easiest way to vote either. So. Anyway, very cool.
So holla. This is
the review portion,
yeah.
Indeed. The review portion of Dead Pit Radio. Got a couple of interesting titles for you guys. First one up we want to talk about is, of course, from our good friends over at Hack Movies. We actually saw them a couple of weeks ago at Horror Hound Weekend. Kevin Strange and company was there and was asking us, when are we going to review Nixon and Hogan Smoke Christmas? Well, the review is here, sir. Let's get into it, Uncle Bill.
One of my favorite things in the world is trying to explain the plots to Hack Movies because they're so, like, incredibly insane. But I'll give it a shot. Nixon and Hogan are sitting around one Christmas day.
Yeah.
And I think... one of them has made like a sock puppet out of a stocking to jerk himself off
He's
with.
Fucking it, yeah.
And all of a sudden, Santa Claus busts in, which Santa Claus looks like Charles Bronson before he died in this movie. He's like got all the makeup and stuff on. He looks really bad. And he's like, he smokes some zombie weed that's made him very ill and he can't complete his present delivery. And he's got to deliver these presents to a certain group of people. So he asked Nixon and Hogan to deliver the presents and gives them items that they'll need along their quest, but they don't know exactly what they're supposed to do with them until they come up on the situation. So he gives like one of them something that looks like cocaine and one of them something that I'm pretty sure was like a bobber, like a fishing pole or something.
Right.
Like, and these things are supposed to be like magical instruments that'll help them defeat the enemies that they come up against. It's like fucking Clash of the Titans or something. Like it's some sort of.
Well, you know, these are, and these movies, I'm going to go ahead and say this, they're not for everyone. I mean, and the bottom line is, you know, the Hack Movies guys, we've sort of supported them since day one, you know, since the first movie, Dream Reaper. And the low-budget horror comedies, okay? And oddly enough, they've actually become more of a bigger-budget movie since. I mean, he's using a lot of After Effects stuff and, you know, better cameras, and he's getting a lot of people that can really, well, not that can act or not is, you know, it doesn't matter. They can deliver the lines, which the lines of dialogue, I would imagine, are hard to even memorize.
Yeah, the thing I've noticed, though, is that really the only two people that have really long lines of dialogue are Nixon and Hogan themselves. Like, the others, they have, like, shorter monologues and things, which I'm assuming is because, like, who in the hell is going to be able to remember all that stuff except the person that wrote it, really? True. But, yeah, the one thing about Hack Movies is if they filmed the stuff on an actual 35mm camera, I think it would look almost exactly and play almost exactly like Troma films from, like, the 80s and stuff, like the way they've got it set up right now. It's the same type of thing, really, and they have progressed a whole lot from the first film. So anyway, back to the story. So along the way, Nixon Hogan like come up against a lot of really weird characters who they're trying to deliver these presents to, and like one of them, I think it's like a wizard who's like a druid, almost kind of like wizard, that tries to imprison them. And another one is like a scientist who's created this jack-o'-lantern headed like fucking Frankenstein monster
which
thing.
Which was their mascot.
Yeah, which is the Hack Movies mascot. But the main heel or villain in the film is Sarsaparilla, the weed witch, who has cursed Santa Claus, I guess.
Who's got to be one of the hottest girls. Probably the hottest girl they've ever had in a Hack movie. I don't know. And the odd thing is, like, her weapon of choice is a strap-on dildo. Uncle Bill.
It is.
That really turned you on, didn't it?
It is. Oh, I can strap that on, man. Come on.
So she was like butt-fucking Santa Claus in it, which is funny, you know. And these movies, basically, like, they're all about pushing buttons, doing things that you're not supposed to do in movies.
Yeah.
A lot of shit-eating going on in it.
In that regard, they are kind of like, a lot of the stuff he does reminds me of stuff that John Waters did in his movies, where he just purposely tries to do the most disgusting thing he can think of to get a reaction, any kind of reaction out of the audience. And it works sometimes, sometimes it doesn't work, but it's always entertaining in these films, though. It's always like...
Yeah, for sure.
There is like a scene of whatever that baby fetish stuff is, where people want to like dress up as babies.
Yeah.
They like shit all over themselves and stuff.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you, like, how disgusting it is, but it's funny. It really is, like...
Then there's another scene, too, where Nixon and Hogan... It's probably my favorite scene in the movie for some reason. I don't know why. They act like they're from a charitable group and go up to this guy who's, you know, eventually the scientist guy, but he's obviously a rich, hoity-toity, supposed to be a character, you know. And they keep making more shit up that they need money for him. He keeps giving them money. And the last thing they asked for was, oh, man, I really got to, you know, take a shit. And the Nixon character basically goes in there and shits in his bathtub.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a shit in this rich motherfucker's bathtub. You know.
That's the thing about these movies, too. They're about the most lowbrow comedy you can ever get.
Yeah.
And if you're into that kind of thing, then these are like some of the best movies. Like, there are people that actually try to do movies like this. I mean, there's a real big subgenre of this right now on the market for, you know, like these low budget horror comedies like this. I don't think anybody really does it better than
But we were talking about this earlier, and Kevin Strange himself actually knows this, and we've mentioned it every time we review one of their movies. And it's very similar. I guess, to Silent Bob chasing Amy. You know, we're chasing Dream Reaper, Uncle Bill.
Yeah.
We want another Dream Reaper, a movie as good as Dream Reaper.
I just think that Dream Reaper was something that appealed to us because it was a band. It was all, like, based around, yeah. like, metal music and, like, that kind of Dio kind of shit that was going on, like, all right. throughout the movie. Like, I just, that was perfectly
And it really
did.
Another thing, too, is it was extremely low budget. Like, they didn't have anything.
But
like,
the one thing, man, out of any one of them movies that I'll always remember, the scene that I don't know why this is, but cracked me up the fucking most, is the scene where he goes to make that fucking popcorn, and he puts it in there, and like pulls it out, and he's just like throwing it at his head. He's not yeah. even trying to eat it or anything. Like, I don't know. There's just certain like quirky things in these movies that like that that really make me laugh. Yeah.
Nixon and Hogan Smoke Christmas. I thought it was a fun movie. It's a short movie. It's like an hour, 10 minutes, something like that. It's a fun watch. If you're into that sort of thing, you'll want to check it out. You can go to hackmovies.com and definitely support those guys because they do work really hard to, you know, to get an audience. I mean, you got to say that. If you go to a convention, they're always painting their faces and coming up with ways to draw more people over there to their table. And they do a ton of shows, too. So.
Yeah. And these movies, like, they always have moments in them that are just absolutely fucking hilarious.
So that is Nixon and Hogan, Smoke Christmas.
So we were talking about Nixon and Hogan, Smoke Christmas, which is a film that was intentionally trying to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to move on and transition to a film that I don't think was trying to be funny, but that comes across as unintentionally hilarious and sad at the same time. Mm. And that is George Romero's latest zombie film, Survival of the Dead.
Yeah. And it's, you know, and it's hard to do this too, because like Romero, he made some of the best horror movies ever, you know, these movies like, you know, Night of Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Creepshow, they're going to live on forever. But movies like this, Uncle Bill, I was warned beforehand. I will say that. I mean, a lot of people were warning us about this.
You've been warned.
Yeah. It's sort of like a challenge to survive Survival of the Dead. I don't know. I mean, it's not out officially on DVD. We got an advanced screener because we're official horrorologists
mm-hmm.
From the Kentucky Board of Horror. But, okay. What in the fuck can we say, though, like, as far as, like, okay, if a plot exists in this movie, it would be...
Well, the plot of it, as far as I can tell, and I've actually watched the film twice, because I watched it the first time and I was
like, sure.
Yeah, I didn't want anybody to be able to come back and say, you didn't give the film a chance, or, you know, you gotta go back and watch it. I watched it twice, all the way through. The first time I was like, my God, I can't believe this. This is some of the worst shit ever. The second time I was like, holy shit, I'm finding more stuff in it that's even worse than the first time I watched it. So here's what I think is the plot. There's a group of soldiers left over like years after, I guess, even any of the stuff from Diary of the Dead takes place. It could be months. It could be years. I don't know. But I know the stuff in Diary of the Dead's already over with. And they're trying to find an island where there's no dead people, no zombies left.
So they're assuming that zombies can't swim.
I'm guessing that they're assuming that someplace there is like an island where you don't have to worry about zombies.
That zombies can't use boats.
Yeah, so within, which oddly enough, after you watch this movie, you probably could believe that zombies could drive boats. So, within the first 10 minutes of the movie, you're treated to some of the worst CG that you can even imagine. Like, I want you to think of the worst CG that you've ever seen Uwe Boll do, and it's worse in this movie. There's a scene where a guy gets bitten, and the side of his face gets bitten off, and it's all CG. It looks horrible. There's a scene where a guy gets his head blown off, And instead of, you know, like in Dawn of the Dead, where they had the classic scene where the door gets kicked in, the guy gets a shotgun taken to the head, and it blows his head off. Everybody always remembers that scene. You've got the guy gets shot in the head. It's CG, and there's little, like, fucking eyeballs, CG eyeballs that go flying. Like, and then his
the
head,
top of his head collapses down to his neck.
It looks like something like a Microsoft slideshow.
Beyond the CG, which the CG is, is like, you know, Sewer Shark from Sega CD, pretty much.
Yeah.
Just talk about the characters themselves in the movie. I guess
I don't know. I watched it twice. I don't know anything about the characters in the movie.
Well, I know that you've got the O'Flynn's, not the McDougals. What do I think? Not McDougals.
It's like the
Muldoons.
Muldoons.
The Muldoons and O'Flynn's.
Why they're Irish, they're like, I have no idea.
I guess they're like, what is the hillbilly couple that fights all the time?
Hatfields and McCoys,
who they've always hated each other, despised each other, and have different ways of disposing of zombies. Whereas the Muldoons believe in sparing the zombies and using them as slaves.
Right.
And the O'Flynn's, they believe in maiming and killing the zombies.
Yeah, that seems to be the main plot of the film. Like, there's one side that wants to treat the zombies this way. There's another side that wants to treat the zombies that way. They both hate each other. Mm-hmm. They've both been feuding for,
though, you've got the army guy narrating the movie, who was briefly in Diary of the Dead, which I'm sure nobody'd even fucking know if they didn't tell you.
They actually do tell you.
Yeah, they do tell you. And, motherfucker sounds like Bret the Hitman Hart doing narration. Well, you know, here was 3 years ago.
Zombies came a boot. The army guys, there's like a whole scene where everybody's on a ship. Getting ready to go over to this island that's run by the guy.
Like a ship without a storm.
I guess it's which one is it? Is he the Muldoon or the O'Flanagan or the O'Flynn?
The O'Flynn.
O'Doul's.
O'Flynn's is the white-haired man.
He promises that this island that they run, there's zombies on it, are completely...
Fucking zombies.
You don't have to worry about them and all this stuff. So they decide to go over to this island, and they're on the
boat. It's off the shore of Delaware.
While they're, yeah.
That's like the only movie ever that was sort of based in Delaware.
It probably is, yeah.
Delaware is a shitty little state it is.
So, the thing that's the most comical, and I couldn't figure out, is he really trying to be intentionally funny, is the death scenes of the zombies. Which, by the way, you're never, ever, at any point in this film, scared. Which is another thing that sucks about it, because the zombies are just
bumbling
fucking idiots in this movie that nobody cares about and are not threatening at all.
If any emotion comes out of this movie, is sheer fucking boredom.
It is.
I mean, and that's a sad thing. Like, I don't give a fuck. You can call in on the show, try to defend this movie. There's no defense for it. Romero was coasting through this movie. There was nothing in this movie.
No.
I mean, there's nothing. There's no characters. It's so bad, you don't remember any of the characters' names in the movie either.
It really looked like, to me, like a film that Uwe Boll would make. That's the impression that I got when I was watching. There's scenes in it where, like, a zombie gets shot with a flare gun, and, like, he gets shot in the stomach, and then, like, his head catches on fire and shit. And that's all CG, and it looks horrible. There's a scene where a zombie gets a fire extinguisher thing, like, shoved into his mouth and then turned on, and, like, his eyeballs CG pop out shit.
Yeah.
It's like a fucking Abbott and Costello routine with these damn zombies. Like, nothing is taken seriously.
What can we do with CG and zombies?
Like, you can't think, but the coup de grace comes later on in the film, and it's the moment where I think I really checked out on the film. Like, I was like, alright, that's fucking enough. That's it. Like, I watched the rest of it, but I was like, at that point I knew it wasn't going to get any better. It was only going to get worse. So they get to the island.
Did they ever call PETA about what happened?
I don't know.
You got zombies biting horses in this movie!
They get to the island, and like you said, that some of the guys are using them zombies for slaves, and some of them are using, they're just shooting them. One of them has a zombie daughter that you are introduced to in the film. This is the guy that's running, I guess, to this part of the island. You're introduced to in the film.
Zombie daughter?
Right as she is riding a horse.
You know what this movie, missed though? This has been great.
Any kind of credibility?
Well, yeah, that too. Sean Connery should have been in it. Here's one of the O'Flynn's. Anyway, also the...
I don't know how you felt about that, but when I saw a fucking zombie, like, riding a horse like she was in the Equestrian World Games, I was like, this is the dumbest shit I've ever seen.
No.
It really, like, disturbed me on a lot of levels that they would have a goddamn, like...
Are you saying, sir, that zombies can't ride horses? Maybe it was a zombie horse.
I guess what I'm saying is from a guy that complained endlessly about zombies being able to run because, you know, they can't run because they'll break their ankles, but they can ride fucking horseback.
That's right, sir.
And they can, like, chop wood and shit. It's like...
Okay. The next one, I've got it. They could call it Vindiction of the Dead. Zombies in this movie, sir, they masturbate. And they create baby zombies.
I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
Anyway. Yeah, another thing, though, it's disturbing to me, at least. And maybe it was the version I watched, but I doubt it. It's probably just crappy cinematography. The movie itself has a feel of, like, I said on Facebook, a Disney Channel original movie from, like, 1995. That was the way it looked. Like, it just looked like shit. The cinematography in it. And it doesn't help, too, that you have these completely over-the-top actors, which I'm guessing come from the fucking Great White North. Whatever.
Well, you had the actors were over the top, but you didn't really learn anything about them. You didn't have any reason to care about them at all. They just, there's like an endless supply of them that ran in and out of the movie. Like the one guy that was the ranch hand or whatever that was working for the rival boss, you know, who he was like, he's like an integral part of the movie, but he only has like about 5 minutes of screen time, so you don't give a shit about what happens to him at all, but he's like...
He's a fucking cocksucker, he is!
He changes sides in the movie, and you're like, you don't even care.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the big problem with this, is like, all the characters are just horrible. Like, you don't really care. Like, and the lead two guys are just way too over the top. Like, especially the old Flynn guy, the gray-haired guy that's just... You're not gonna come with me then! You're gonna leave me here!
Yeah, there's a lot of Irishness just, in it.
Yeah. Man. It's like, I don't know. I think it's really disappointing. And Uncle Bill said that it made Diary of the Dead look like Dawn of the Dead, and it's really true. I mean, Diary of the Dead definitely had problems. It was not a good movie. We didn't like it. But what I said when I reviewed it is, it's a movie that had potential. I mean, it had a few things been changed, a few actors been changed out. The CG, you know, the fuckers that do the CG in these movies need to be shot in the fucking head for real, you know.
Yeah, maybe they could show that. That would be
it. Had the story had potential? I think there's no potential with Survival of the Dead. There's nothing that could have potentially improved upon what we finally.
I'm still trying to figure out if it was supposed to be a comedy or like a drama. I have no idea, really. But another thing I noticed too that I would never expect from a Romero movie is the dialogue in the movie is fucking awful. It's some of the worst writing. I wish you had a clip of this scene. I can remember it verbatim because it's one of those scenes where I'm watching it and I actually had to rewind it because it was so horrible that I really couldn't believe I was actually hearing the shit, like, in a Romero movie. And that was, like, the scene where there's a young kid who's, like, an upstart and wants to be a military guy, and then there's, like, the older main guy who's the head of the military.
Flynn.
No, not him. The actual army guy, like the main army guy. And they're sitting there, and he goes, the main army guy's, like, talking to him about, you know, the whole situation. He goes, small towns breed small minds. And then the young kid turns to the guy, and he goes, you're not small, though. Look, how big are you?
You're big old flower.
You're about 6'2", aren't you?
And you're a big old boy.
Without missing a beat, that guy goes, No, I'm actually 6'1". It's like, what?
Yeah, I'm really just 6'1", kid.
That whole conversation just derailed, and that guy's completely blue. No, buddy.
I think, though, the bottom line is this, and people can, you know, there's going to be people that like this movie. I don't know why. Maybe the fact they were in it. But there's going to be a small percentage of people that will defend this movie. But I'm telling you, here and now, there is no defense for this movie.
No.
I think another one it resembles, and I know people are going to fucking be mad, fuck it. Creepshow 3, motherfuckers. It is that off base.
If you gave me a choice, if you were like, okay, you have to defend one of these movies. You have to defend either Diary of the Dead or Survival of the Dead. I would take Diary of the Dead 100 times over before I would try to defend Survival of the Dead. There's stuff I can find in Diary of the Dead to defend. There's nothing I can find in. I couldn't find anything about that movie that I could defend.
I mean, it's getting to the point, and I know Romero needs money. Maybe he's just doing these for money, quick buck, you know, which is fine. I mean, if he's doing it for the money, he's not really putting his heart into it, which it seems like to me. It definitely seems to be the case with me. I could be wrong. I doubt it. He's making movies that are on the level of the Doodlesons. They're just totally uninspired shit that is just thrown out there. You know, there's nothing. You can tell that he just doesn't have it anymore to make.
But the thing is, the weird thing is, I really don't want the guy to quit. Like, I know a lot of people like want him to stop making movies. I just want him to find something worthy to make a movie about now. Like, I don't want him to quit. I just want him to like actually try or I don't even know how to really explain
it. Whether or not it's a zombie movie or not. If he doesn't have his heart and soul into it, quit. Fucking quit. You know, you can do conventions and make way more money. You know, maybe it's a little harder, but to me, it tarnishes his career, these movies. You know, they're going vastly downhill, each one that he's making, which I don't know how one could get worse than fucking Survival of the Dead. But we were saying the same thing when we saw Diary of the Dead.
And at this point, it'd have to be like a silent film or something.
Yeah.
Just like,
and
made
you know,
on
the only people that I've seen that's defended this movie have been the absolute diehard loyalist Romero fans. And you all know how big of a fan Uncle Bill is of Romero. But I think that we can, even with John Carpenter and Tobe Hooper and all those guys, when we see these movies, we see them for what they are. We don't see them for what those guys once were. You know, we see the films as what
and
is out there now.
To be fair to the websites and stuff that cover this stuff, we don't have any affiliation with the director, nor do we have any affiliation with the movie itself. Like, we didn't get a set visit. We're not trying to kiss anybody's ass. Like, I don't have any, like, other than just judging the movie for what it is, I don't have any connection to the movie whatsoever. So you can take somebody else's word, you can take our word.
Survival of the Dead, uninspired drivel.
I can't even like begin to explain how much that movie's
awful. It's flat out horrible. When it comes out, I'm not going to tell you not to buy it. You know, if you want to show your support for Romero, by any means, go ahead.
You have to see it.
But don't expect it to be good. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, if you like Romero, you're going to watch this movie regardless. I would watch this movie if Romero himself showed up at my house and was like, "Brother, you don't need to watch that. That's shit." I'd still be like, "I got to watch it, George. I mean, I'm a huge fan. You know, I just had to watch it." And anybody that's a real Romero fan will watch it regardless of what anybody says anyway.
Yeah. Make up your own opinions. I'm just willing to guess that your opinion will be much like ours. So.
Yeah. Anyway. I'm almost willing to guarantee it.
That is it for the show this week. That's Survival of the Dead. I have no idea when the fucking thing's coming out. But we'll keep you posted, I'm guessing. It's already out in the UK. That's how we got a copy of it.
That's right.
All the way from the UK. So anyway, until next week, I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
I am Uncle Bill.
And you've been listening to the number one rated horror talk radio show in the United States. It's DeadPit.com. I'm just kidding. We're the number one rated fucking show ever throughout the entire universe.